Okay, I mean, we usually start with a song. I don't know if we should do that this week. I think I'll just start with the Bible reading since we're almost 20 minutes late here. So, anyway, I picked a Bible reading. I know John's working his way, and I think we're in Mark somewhere, but or Matthew. I don't want to mess him up, so I'm going to pick one of my favorites and just read it because it speaks to a lot of what's going on and what I believe and what we all need to think about. So, and this is on charity, which is the first epistle of Paul to the Corinthians, chapter 13. Okay, so it says, charity is to be preferred before all gifts. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And if I should have prophecy, and I should know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I should have faith so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing. If I should distribute all my goods to feed the poor, and if I should deliver my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profit me nothing. Charity is patient, charity is kind. Charity envieth not, dealeth not perversely, is not puffed up, it is not ambitious, seeketh not her own, it is not provoked to anger, and thinketh no evil. Rejoice not in iniquity, but rejoice with the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hope all things, hopeth all things, endure all things. Charity never falleth away, whether prophecy shall be made void, or tongues shall cease, or knowledge shall be destroyed. For we know in part, and we prophesize in part. But when that which is perfect is come, and that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, and I understood as a child, and I thought as a child. But when I become a man, I put away the things of a child. We now see, though through a glass, in a dark manner, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as I am known. And now there remaineth faith, hope, and charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity. Okay, amen to that. So let's get...
And a particular matter of business, I just want to say that this is the Monday night NLA Monday night call for National Liberty Alliance. It is Monday, the 24th of February, and it's, 9:21 according to my clock. I thought we just need to put that time stamp.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you for saving me. So that's good. Yeah, it's important to put the label on it. Let me see if I can get back to my wall here. I don't know. I got so many things.
Okay, Brent is here tonight also. He's ready to go whenever you're ready.
Okay, so normally I don't know how many anything Jan has announcements or what we're doing with questions that Jan has. Let's see how many there are there, and we'll decide how we're going to do that. And anybody that wants to say anything, they should get in the queue, which I don't know if that's open. Do we?
Not open yet.
Okay. Well,
I put it on lecture. You want me to open it up?
Yeah, you can open it for now, and we'll. So people can start getting in there. I do have something to talk about before you go through. I want to make an announcement of what I discussed with John. And that is the fact that he's going to be putting up there, and he thinks tomorrow, I don't know, he's not feeling good. He's been pushing himself real hard, but he would like tomorrow to put up a page with all the evidence for the next indictment that has to do with the vaccines. And we've been working on that, and we have quite a bit of stuff. And I gave him a bunch of stuff, and I don't actually know what he chose from what I gave him in my research and other people. But tomorrow there'll be a page up, and it should be tomorrow. But we're going to vote on it not this Thursday, but the following Thursday. We're going to go ahead and do the indictment. So you need to get up there and look at that evidence. We got lots of videos. There's written material. I don't know if, you know, look at read the written material if you have the the mind to, but you don't have to. There's so many videos up there that are that have enough evidence for you to make up your mind. But I'm kind of a reader, and I hope he put up the lawsuit that was suing the Health and Human Services, and I don't remember who else, but because they did put a FOIL request in, because back in the 1980s when they created this mandatory vaccination law, which there was guidelines, because you know, we lose sight of things when we fight. Like we say, oh, those the vaccinations are bad. They have mercury in them. They got this in them. They got that in them. And that's true. There are a lot of dangerous things in these vaccines that the pharmaceutical companies are pushing, and they've gotten immunity, so they you can't even sue them if they hurt you or kill your child or whatever. They are held immune, so they got a very special status granted to them. And I dare say a lot of it is unconstitutional, or most of it, because I don't care if they tell us we got to put water in our veins. They don't have that authority. They just don't. You know, look, if there was a pandemic, there are certain ways of handling a pandemic. Certainly the government is supposed to try to keep order and continuation of the government. So if things got real bad, they can give you a choice of quarantining yourself at home, or to come out to some quarantine camp or whatever. I wouldn't go to a quarantine place if it was the last place in the world, but that's me. I would quarantine at home if I had to. So, you know, look, they can make rules and regulations and all this stuff, and I have my own mind on this. I've done a lot of studies since the beginning of this thing, and I opted out of the vaccine thing, you know, for my children. And I have good reason for that. And, you know, besides the fact that they're using aborted fetal cells and whole DNA and all kinds of other weird science in them. So, I mean, you could say it's a religious thing, but it wasn't primarily a religious thing. It's religious. It's abhorrent to me that they would put this stuff in. Well, one of the things that they were supposed to do in order to get this special status and foist this on the people, is they were supposed to every 2 years, I believe it was 2 years, I thought it was four, but then somebody told me, no, it's every 2 years, they were supposed to issue reports that says that they, you know, that studies that showed that the vaccines were safe and they were efficacious, that they were working. And also what they were supposed to do was make sure that there was more compliance going on, voluntary or otherwise. And what they discovered is, you know, they said, well, let us see these reports that they're safe. Now, they're up to like 39 or 40 vaccines before the age of one now. And they were supposed to be delivering all these studies on each vaccine to the House and Congress that is in Health and Human Services that's supposed to oversee this. And they haven't done one. There is no studies. They haven't done the first one. They've never proved anything. All they've done is concentrate on the getting more people to take them, but they've never proven that they're safe, and they've never proven that they work, really work. And they've never studied all these vaccines given at the same time what they produce, you know, which is the same thing for most of the drugs out there. There's no studies on more than two drugs at a time, or I think two. I don't even know if they've ever studied three different drugs being administered at the same time. So it's a big can of worms. But let's not get lost in the minutiae. Fact of the matter is there's much of what the federal government is doing, even by ordering this stuff, you know, and not giving anybody choices to do anything else, but, you know, very dictatorial. It's against the Constitution. It's against our unalienable rights. And don't forget, you know, all our rights in America are couched in property rights. And your first piece of property is your body. And if you can't decide what's going to go in your body or out of your body or you know, what to do, that's a big violation of your rights. Then you're not free, and you're not, and you know, you don't have unalienable rights in that sense, because Everything else that we claim to be and who we are flows from that. So just remember that. But anyway, go up and look at the evidence, read it, and then Thursday after next, you should be ready to come to a special meeting. We'll post it. There'll be plenty of warning when we do the indictment on these companies who haven't done the first test, you know, and they're making all kinds of money and enjoying immunity and foisting this on us. So anyway, I won't belabor that point. And you know, a lot of these are my opinions from after years and years of study and talking to people. I have a lot of personal experiences too. So anyway, that's what's the announcement that John wanted me to make as far as the vaccine page and the indictment goes. Now, Jan, I don't know if you have any other announcements. Let's do announcements first, and then let me know how many questions you got there, and we'll decide what we're going to do with them, and then we'll jump to Brent, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I have several announcements. The first one we repeated a number of times, and that's the fact that we have 10 districts for the committeemen, and we have filled, it looks like, 8 of those positions. We need a district leader for each one. The missing ones are now 5 and 6. 5 is the areas or states of North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And Region 6 or District 6 is Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. So if you live in one of those states or adjacent to one of those states, or you like to travel by the airways, you can be living in any of the 50 states and actually be a district member for any one of the districts. Please volunteer, or if you know someone other than yourself that might like to take up a district leader position for the committeeman, just email me, Jan, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Now, last week we finished up the new quaranto on the Second Amendment, and we mailed that out. Should be all said, done, gone. It was mailed to all 94 federal districts. And to read it, you can go to the grand jury and then click action against the judiciary and scan down to the last one on the list, which is titled Filed February 19th, 2020, Writ Quaranto, Second Amendment. And we should probably remind people that John now has a regularly scheduled show on Patriot Soapbox at 11 to 1 Eastern Time each Monday, and another one every other Sunday from 1 to 2 starting February 16th, 2020. I believe, have you started one also, Gerard, yet, or are you still in the work?
No, I started last Tuesday, and I'm gonna do Tuesdays and see how that works out.
What's the time for it, Gerard?
That's the same as John's, 11 to 1, 11 to 12, yeah, 2 hours, 11 to 1.
11 to 1, okay, great.
Eastern time, by the way, everybody.
Yeah. Okay, and that's all that I have for announcements. I have 1, 2, 3, 4 questions for you. If you want to go through questions, shouldn't take too long.
All right, let's try to tackle them and see what
okay. We know. From time to time, many of us hear about invoking our Fifth Amendment right to remain silent in the event of a traffic stop. If one is stopped or apprehended and we say absolutely nothing, what kind of reaction can one expect from the officer, and what recourse does one have after that? And in the event one engages in bare minimum verbal conversation with an officer, when it comes time for the officer to ask if the person they stopped understands, and the person that is stopped says no, where can one expect the situation to go from there, and what can one do from that point on? Any thoughts or comments on that?
Well, first of all, you do have a right to not incriminate yourself, and you do have a right not to say anything, but from that point on, everything's going to go downhill, I can tell you that right now. I don't recommend doing that, because you're just kind of like poking at them to get harder. You know, look, you're driving the car, and they don't understand the right to travel. Obviously, they're not schooled in the Constitution, and if anything, they tell them that people that use these languages and that they're not driving, they're riding, and they're educating them, and they're saying they're sovereign citizens. Be careful, they're dangerous. They might attack you. Blah blah. So you right away you put yourself. They're gonna profile you into that group. So I wouldn't do it. You know, if you have a license, you know, if you're driving with a license, you kind of like, you know, you've entered into that contract and you're required to show it. And I understand that the only reason that they can regulate that is because it's considered commercial and the government has a certain amount of control over commercial activities, where if you're not driving commercially, technically you shouldn't have to put up with any of that baloney. But I seriously suggest that, you know, you give them, you know, if you have a license, you show your license. You just don't offer anything more than your name and maybe your license and registration. You know, look at you driving a car. Hopefully it has a plate on the back, because you won't get too far without a plate on the back. So you've already complied somewhat. So you can't, look at it, it's like being pregnant. You can't be just a little bit pregnant. So the minute you stuck your toe in the water, unless you want to drive with no plates and fight them from tooth and nail from the beginning, you start contracting with them, which, you know, when the minute you get a title and you put plates on your car, you've contracted with them, which says that you're going to operate your car and do certain things and according to that state's vehicle and traffic laws. So basically, you've already kind of entered into that by registering. So you can't sit there like a dummy with your mouth shut and refuse to answer, because they're going to wonder what the hell you did to make you shut up like that. And they're going to try to find out, you know. So, you know, look at, use your judgment as far as, but, you know, they also go over top. And so when you feel like you're being abused or misused, you know, you can start out by cooperating and handing your license to them. I mean, you can roll the window down just a little bit and hand it through the window, you know, and sometimes they don't like that, but you say, no, I'd rather keep it up. And they can't really stop you from doing those things, you know. There's some really, really good guidelines for traffic stocks, and I think it was Lewis. What the heck was his name? I'll have to get it. And he has a narrative that you carry with you, and you could read right off the card. And what it does is it sets you up for a win in court. And this guy is an ex-cop, and he's a lawyer. And he knows the law, and he, if you follow his thing, he guarantees you that you'll come out all right. And do you remember who that guy was? I've mentioned him more than once. We might even have him on the website, but I'm having a senior moment right now. And it's something like Lewis or something. But I'll figure it out. If I can find it during the call, I'll mention it. And I suggest that you go to this guy's place and at least copy that narrative, because I found him to be very, very good and reasonable. And being an ex-officer, cop, traffic cop, and he knows the deal. And I thought that he gave very good advice. So that's my suggestion. You know, don't go out there, you know, trying to reinvent the wheel or trying to start your own driving revolution, because it'll end badly, believe me. That's the advice I got on that one anyway. So what's next?
Yeah, they say never argue your case alongside the road.
That's right. And usually a cop won't ask you, do you understand? They ask you that in court. That's a court one, do you understand?
Right.
And when the judge asks you, do you understand, he's looking for jurisdiction. That's a whole different battle. It's kind of the same, but it's different. All along the way, they need to contract with you. So, and your fight is to not to contract with them. But you have to have very good finesse about how you go about it. And the way that the things you say and the things you do will signal to the prosecutor and the judge whether or not you know what the heck you're talking about. And if you know what you're talking about and you come out good, usually they won't want to mess with you, and they'll usually just dismiss it and get you the heck out of there, because they don't look at their, basically they're looking for quick money. So if you become a porcupine, so to speak, which doesn't mean, you know, doesn't mean that you're a rattlesnake or some kind of, you know, a serpent that spits venom. It just means if you touch me, you're going to get poked from my spine, and that's the best, you know, way that you can be. So, anyway, I lost track of the question, I think.
Next question is there a way we could be informed of our place in the queue so that we will be prepared for prompting to contribute?
I don't know about that. Somebody that has more brain power than I do might be able to think of that. I mean, look, it changes so much and it moves. And I don't know if we could show the queue or not.
Not to my knowledge.
You probably have to announce it, you know. You can do
it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we have a certain cart block with the queue. Like, we can push people ahead and push people backwards. We don't usually do that, but we do that occasionally. If there's somebody coming in that we know of ahead of time and we want to get them in, you know, we can make sure we get them up there earlier or whatever, or make sure we pick them. So, I mean, if you have something that's really pertinent that you want to get out, you know, you can mention it in the beginning, maybe. And we can move you up if it's something that's of interest to the whole group. But, you know, we can't. I mean, everybody wants to get in the queue and they want to be picked first. I understand that. But I'm saying if you have something that's, you know, pertinent for everybody, and we don't do it very much. We don't mess with the order. It's first come, first serve. And we try to get everybody. But, I mean, maybe what I'll, you know, what I do sometimes, I say, you know, there's seven people in the queue, and that should give you an idea about how long we could be, although we get long-winded on certain people. Like, if something's going on and it seems to be a good subject and we're able to use it as a teaching thing for the whole group, we'll let people go on longer and put in our two cents about that particular thing, because this is a learning process, and that's how you learn. So, you know, we need to be a little bit more conscientious about not going on too long. Sometimes we get stuck in there much too long, and you know, I can't spend, you know, 15 minutes with each person, or you know, or even longer. Sometimes we have people go 20 minutes unless it's a very, very, very special deal, unless it's schooling for everybody. But you know, if you're in there looking for information for yourself, in your case, that's not fair to everybody else. So you want to be pretty specific with your questions, and we'd like to get you in and out. And you know, anything that you know, we look at how much can we do in a queue time. You can email questions in, and that's another recourse you have, especially if it's something that's going to take some time, and maybe you could, you know, one of us can look at it beforehand and get back to you, you know. And plus all the other things we have on the site as far as what you may need, you know, the resources we have for filling out paperwork and everything. So I don't know, you know, how much you could expect to put in on this Monday night, you know, questions and answers, except it to bring a subject up that maybe we can give more information on if it's something we haven't touched. If you kind of get my drift, you know what I mean? So you want to keep it, look at, you're out there. When you're in the queue, you're talking to everybody. You're talking nationwide and even worldwide, because we have people from other countries that listen to this. So we want to keep it kind of professional, and we want to keep it, you know, a little snappier. I know that we tend to go a little long, and that we need to work on, you know. And I don't know how I can tell you where you are in the queue, or that I even want that extra job on me as far as doing that, you know what I mean? So if you think you have something that you really need to bring out or whatever, I think that you could email the, you know, Jan or somebody, and you know, we could make arrangements for that ahead of time, so at least we know where we're going with that, and then we'll look for you in the queue, and maybe we'll even bump you ahead. And especially if it's a subject that's pertinent to what's going on with our paperwork at that month, that particular time, you know, those things always are going to be at the top of the interest as far as the NLA administration. So, look, we'll do our best to get everybody and to cover everything, because you can bring up any subject. But, you know, human nature is that, you know, a lot of times we have papers that we worked on that we discuss. And, you know, those are kind of the lessons that we're putting out there. But not only are they lessons, we're not just picking them because they're lessons. We're picking them because that's what the current events and that's where we are in the courts. And they're all educatable. So, you know, just use your judgment. And if you think it's really important and you need and you want to bring something up, just email it first, you know, and then we'll go from there. But other than that, just try to be direct and get your questions quickly and have consideration for the people behind you. So that's all I can say about that. Anything else, Dan?
Yeah. How about lettering an affidavit as an affidavit in truth versus an affidavit of truth?
Well, I don't know. Is that like potato and potato? I don't know. It's... In truth and of truth. Yeah, of truth or in truth. I don't know. What's the difference? I mean, I know in law you can have a lot of difference with a little word. I mean, you know, Clinton said something, and I always thought he was a dumbbell, but you know what? He was pretty slick, and they call him Slick Willie for a reason. And when they said something to him, and I don't remember what the question was, and he said, that depends on what the meaning of is.
Yeah.
And that was a very profound thing that he said that goes right up to God, I think. When I got, you know, first I said, that's really stupid, you know. Then I got thinking about it, and it was a very intelligent thing for him to say to in order to get out of what they were trying to get him into, you know what I mean? And so, you know, it depends on what the definition of is. He's right. You know, so those things can be important, and I don't know the difference between of or in. I suppose that's a study somebody can do. If somebody wants to educate us as to, you know, why one is better than the other, or why if a situation you should use in or of, you know, I mean, look at a comma in the wrong place can change the whole meaning of a sentence or a paragraph. So I think that Brent is probably a better one to ask that because he's more schooled in the language of law, you know. And, of course, you know, he's not a big one for magic words, so I think you're probably going to get a good answer from him on that one, and maybe he'll want to expound upon that when he gets on. But anyway, I don't know what the difference is, and, you know, if you want to let us know or somebody wants to do, you know, maybe Brent has a better answer than I do because I don't have an answer specifically. I'll tell you what, if I was writing a paper, I probably would Google the two and make a decision because some things do make a big difference depending on how you use them and where you use them is what I'll say. You know, I'm not going to belittle it because it could be important. And then, of course, you could put all kinds of importance on it, and you put it in there in the court, and they don't know no difference, and the judge won't pay attention to it, and nobody cares anyway. So that's the other thing that happens with us, okay? I guess that's it.
Okay. What may one recommend for someone new to researching?
Someone new to researching?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Well, look, we have so many resources on our site. What I recommend is you go in and you look what we have. Look, we have Black's Law Dictionary. We have all, you know, we have the anatomy of the case and all that. And I would voraciously read that stuff, and it's not boring. And I mean, I don't know what kind of researcher you're talking about. I mean, you know, there's certain research that we do on current events and stuff, and you gotta be pretty good with search terms and, you know, Google Analytics and things like that. But I don't know, you know, as researching, the more you do, the better you get. You know, and it depends on your sources, and I like to think that a lot of what we quote as sources are more pristine than anybody. You know, Black's Law has went through many changes, and the later ones are very much watered down. We generally use, like, the fifth edition is about as new as we go. And, you know, a lot of, look at those things that are fundamental principles or maxims of law, they can't change anyway. So you might, you know, the fact that you're using the fifth and not the 17th, it shouldn't make any difference, because if the 17th is cannot contradict what the Fifth says, because otherwise the Constitution doesn't mean what the Constitution says or means, in my mind. So I think we have some pretty good resources that we recommend in as far as looking up things, you know. And part of the research you want to do is to research the terminologies and words. And, you know, Black's Law is very good for that. And we have other sources that we recommend and that you can download for free that are on the site that are very helpful, you know. And then once you discover certain things, like I know one of the things that John has done through the years, and it's a very good idea, is he would make a file of different footnotes and maxims. And so that when he's writing a paper and he comes down to something, he can find those things and insert them where they apply. And he has the Supreme Court quote. He has the whole footnote saved, because you can use it over and over again in the right places. And so that makes writing a paper much easier if you don't have to keep looking for that stuff over and over again. You know, of course, anything you put in a court case, you should be aware that if you're going to quote something, they expect you to shepherdize it. And what that means, shepherdizing, when you quote a site, shepherdizing it means that you went in and you studied the latest thing to make sure that particular thing that you're citing still holds true, that it wasn't superseded, that type of stuff. Because especially for an attorney, if an attorney puts something in there that's not true, he could be sanctioned. We get a little more leeway going in as non-lawyers. But they can still slap you for using a quote that was superseded, or, you know, that you're misquoting because another court ruled and they expanded it or they took some of it out. And you'll see that a lot of times, that they modify these different things that are acceptable cites. So you want to be careful what you're citing, and the court expects you to shepherdize it. And there's a whole site that you can pay for that does that you put the quote in and it goes back through and it looks at all the revisions that were ever made on that particular citing. I mean a site as far as, you know, a Supreme Court ruling that held precedent, or, you know. So anyway, that's the best I can tell you with that, you know, as far as researching goes.
Okay, that's the last question, Gerard.
Okay, good. So the queue is starting to fill up, which is good, and we're going to go ahead and find Brent. And we got like 7 people in the queue, just so you know. So that's not too many at 10 to 10. So, Brent, are you around? Does anybody see Brent? And actually, he can unmute himself, I understand.
Yep. Yeah, I see him.
Okay.
I got it. I did it. I'm on you.
Okay,
unmuted.
Look at that. You're an expert.
Oh, don't say expert. Yeah, we'll talk about that, but I'm getting better at it. That's right. And just listening to you talk, giving me plenty of things to say and the things that were brought up. Is it time for me to start then, Gerard?
You have the floor, so do your little introduction and your disclaimers, okay. And let's get going. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
If you could back off your mic just a little bit, you're really driving it hard.
Oh, I got a new mic. That's probably what's going on. Is that better?
That's a little better. It could go just a little bit more.
Okay, how about that?
That's pretty good. It's going to peak when you...
Okay, I'll just try to talk softer. Okay. I got it turned way down. Thank you for letting me know.
It's like a new car. You can get a speeding ticket, Brent.
This is... we can talk about that a little bit. This is Brent. Oh, by the way, well, give the disclaimers. My name is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. That's www.commonlawyer.com. And my comments are my own. They may or may not comport with the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, but they have been kind enough to allow me to say a few words each week now for a few years. Time does fly. Well, somebody asked about the cop stopping you on the road. And like Gerard, I remember seeing a lot of YouTube videos. There are some good stuff on there. Some lawyers that major on understanding such things and keeping up with how to handle traffic stops. And you can type in traffic stops, criminal defense lawyer. You'll get more than you can listen to. But the lawyers that I've listened to are worth listening to on that subject. And they'll just, oh, one particular fellow, say, well, do you know any of these fellows? One of them I've met. His name is Victor. Victor, I'll think of his last name here in a minute. He's from Phoenix, Arizona. I met him in 2006 at a conference out there, a legal kind of conference. He's one of the hot shots in Phoenix when it comes to criminal defense. And most everybody in Phoenix, I think, knows Victor. His last name is not coming to me. But if somebody can think of it, they can maybe text one of us and let us know. But there are many others you can listen to. And traffic stops come down to criminal procedure, and particularly what the Fourth Amendment, what the courts have discovered and said that the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment will allow. The Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution. The Fifth Amendment has to do with your responsibility to know when to speak and know when not to speak. Your responsibility to decide when you should not speak. The Fifth Amendment protects that. And your responsibility to decide when you should speak. The First Amendment protects that. And that's Mark J. Victor. Thank you, madam. I won't say her name. Maybe she doesn't want me to. She just messaged me. Mark Victor, V-I-C-T-O-R. He's a hot shot of a criminal defense lawyer. Now, what he used to do was this, and I took his idea. He was a lot younger then. That's been 15 years ago, and he had been in the Desert Storm. He hadn't been a lawyer that long at that time, but he's risen rapidly. But what he did was he would hand out three business cards. It had his name on one side, Mark Victor, criminal defense lawyer, and on the other side it said this. It said, I refuse to speak and rest upon the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution. The number of my lawyer is, and then it would have Mark Victor's number. And I made up cards like that and gave them to people. And so that way you don't have to say anything. If you really don't want to talk, you don't have to. But it is true, as Gerard pointed out, that that's a red flag to cops. If you decide not to speak, that's a red flag. They don't like that. Now, okay, I see. Somebody said, where's my card? Well, I'll have to get you one. They don't like it, and they're trained. Oh, some of them are trained, but they're trained wrongly. They're trained to believe things that are possible but may not be absolutely true. When you get stopped on a traffic stop, the first stop that you're going to have if you get arrested is the courts. And remember, there are three branches, three powers of government. There are the courts, the judicial power. In your state, for instance, or in the national government, but in your state, there's the courts, and then that's the judicial power, and then there is the executive power. Well, that's the police officer. He's the man he's supposed to enforce the law. That's why he's out there. So you've got the judicial, he's the executive, and then you've got the legislative branch, which passes those laws that tell you what you can and can't do on the road, etc., and whatever else they think they have jurisdiction to do. But your first stop after a traffic stop, if you get arrested, is the courts. And so it's important to know what the courts will do. Now, don't be foolish enough to think that you're going to go look up the law and you're going to know what you're going to tell the courts, and that's the way it's going to be. That's the advantage of having a lawyer involved. Anybody, I don't care who you are, how formally educated you are or informally educated, how trained you are in the law or how trained you are not in the law, anybody can look up what the law says on the books. But that doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. Not at all. And that's where a lawyer comes in. Lawyers live in a culture. They live in a world. They move and breathe the air of lawyerism and lawyering. And it's a culture, not of what does the law say. Now watch me close here. It's a culture of what will the courts do. And they will advise their clients based not especially on parsing the verbs of some statute someplace. They will advise their clients, if they're good lawyers, and it's a culture of this, they will advise their clients on what the courts will do in reaction to you if you do this, that, or the other. That's number one, what the lawyer will do. Keep in mind, a lawyer is not an officer of the executive branch, that means the law enforcement branch. He's not an officer of the legislative branch, no. He's an officer of the judicial branch. He takes an oath. He takes an oath, the oath that the Constitution requires every state, every lawyer in America, whether he's in CONUS, the continental United States, in one of the states, or whether he's in one of the territories of the United States, such as Guam or Puerto Rico. All of them, the Constitution requires, take the oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. And their world is the courts, because that's where they live, brew, move, and have their being. And so the question, and this is true, the first stop is the courts. The question is, what will the courts do when you get there and you told the policeman you're not going to talk? And there's then a body of law that the lawyer can argue to the courts, but he's more concerned with what the courts will do than what the law says. It's his job to argue the law, yeah. But let's get real here. He's concerned about his client. If he's a conscientious lawyer, and you find one every once in a while, just like every once in a while you'll find a conscientious preacher, every once in a while you'll find a conscientious politician, every once in a while, and you'll find a conscientious good doctor every once in a while, and you'll find a conscientious good lawyer every once in a while. And if they are, then they'll be concerned to try to know what the courts will do in any given instance. Because the courts, now keep this in mind also, and this is just the way it is, and it's the way our common law works, and it's the way the Constitution of the United States has set up our national government. The courts are not bound. Watch me close. The judge in the court, nothing in our law binds him to obey legislation. Nothing. He is independent, utterly, of the legislative branch and of the executive branch. Now that's not always the way they feel about it, and a lot of them will say otherwise and believe it, but it's not true. No, our common law government, there are three branches, and they're all independent of each other. They're co-equal. That's what co-equal means. There is no hierarchy. No, the Supreme Court of the United States is not the final word on what the law is in America. As people believe that. The judges believe that often. The courts even believe that. But that doesn't mean it's true, and we need to be saying otherwise because it's not true. And our freedom depends upon the branches of government being independent from each other. Picture a tree, a big tree, an old tree that's grown up to where there isn't a limb on it, not a limb on it for a while. You can look up there, and it's higher than you can jump, and there's a limb up there. And then you see another one, and you see three limbs. Well, the tree, in my analogy, represents the Constitution of the United States, or the Constitution of your state. We live in a common law country. And in a common law country, the constitutions are rooted in our common law, and they express three co-equal branches of government, as does our United States Constitution. So you got this tree, it's rooted in the common law. The common law is what enables it to be what it is, to stand up and to live and run sap and be sturge. And then you've got these three branches, and each one of those branches is a separate branch. There are three branches of government, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. That's why the first three articles of our Constitution of the United States talk about the legislative, the executive, and the third article, the judicial branch. Well, the tree, rooted in the common law, the branches are growing out of the tree. Now, if you'll think and consider and contemplate those branches of a tree, any tree, no branch of any tree depends upon any other branch. No, it's independent of the other branches. What does it depend upon? It's attached and gets all of its sap from the tree. A branch does not depend on any other branch. And so also our three branches of government do not depend upon each other. In fact, if you look at a tree, you'll notice that those branches will shoot out, and they'll immediately, if they keep growing, they'll start to shoot up. They don't shoot out unless it's to get out far enough to get light, and then if they have to, they shoot straight up and they try to outgrow the other branches. Why? Because not only do they not depend upon each other, the branches of trees, by nature, compete with each other for sunlight. They reach for it. And that's the way the branches of our government do. They don't depend on each other. No, they don't. As a matter of fact, they are at odds with each other. Well, look at the legislature, our national legislature. They hate, well, the two branches of our national legislature. Now, we don't talk in America about the branches of our legislatures very much. Now, in Britain, they talk about that a lot. They talk about the two branches of Parliament, for instance. The House of Lords, which is comparable to our Senate, the upper house, and then the lower house, the House of Representatives, they call the just a member of Parliament. And members of Parliament are in the lower branch, House of Lords and Parliament. And they say that their legislature is divided into two branches. Well, ours are too. There is one state that only has one branch in their legislature. I believe it's Nebraska. They don't have a Senate and a House of Representatives as all other states. But still, they have three branches of government. Most of our common law government, fashioned after the old model in England, and have an upper and lower house. And because of that, they compete too, you see. Now, our Congress of the United States, the lower house, as it's called in Britain, the House of Representatives, we call it here, they're in stiff competition with the Senate. But overall, then, the legislative branch had the power to make life miserable for the executive branch, the president. Again, they're independent. They fight. They fuss. They hate each other. They compete, just as the branches of trees compete for sunlight. Get out of the way. I got to get higher. Well, that's what the branches of government are doing. You say, well, what a terrible mess that is. Well, it is messy. Common law government is messy. They don't have messes like that in the rest of the world. No, they have worse messes. Like what? Revolution, assassination, coup, never-ending, revolving. That's why they call it revolution, because it never ends. It's a constant round and round and round. I have a friend from Brazil, that country down in South America, Nebraska. Somebody just texted a message to me. So it was Nebraska, yeah. Thank you, by the way. Down in Brazil. And he was a member of the military. He was an officer. He's not my friend. I know his daughter married a friend of mine, put it that way. And things got so bad down there that he and some of his fellow officers, they organized an army, and they organized a coup, and they fought. A lot of people were killed. And the conservatives, which is the father of this woman I know, the conservatives that hated communism, they won. And then the next election occurred in just a couple of short years, and they had another commie back in government, and back the other way they went again. So it was just revolving. It's been that way in South America since the Europeans got there. Nothing but a constant revolving because the Spanish and the Portuguese settled South America, and they live in a law of the city Romanist country. And so they're comfortable with all that. They're comfortable with a dictator. And when there is that, though, as long as whoever's in power gets to say what the law is and who gets prosecuted and who goes to jail, and it's a government by a single will, that doesn't look so messy. But it's a lot more hellish to live in a place like that. Our government's messy all the time. People fighting, fussing, carrying on. The legislature and the Congress is in gridlock, and I'm thinking, well, I'm happy about that. That's the way it was designed. That's what common law government is. I'm willing, no kidding, I'm willing to pay them $174,000 a year apiece as long as they don't do anything. Pay them to do, just don't do anything. Like old Joe Cannon said, Speaker of the House of Representatives for years, very powerful. Back about 1910, he said, his famous line was, "This country don't need no more legislation. This country don't need no more legislation." Well, amen to that. He may have been a little rough around the edges, but he had his head screwed on straight. What he had was fundamentals. Now, a while ago, somebody said something about how do you do research and how do you study the law. Whatever you do, if you go to study the law, in our common law country, don't get caught up with details. Forget it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter to right-headed lawyers. Matter of fact, a good lawyer, a common lawyer, as we call him in America, he practices law by fundamentals. In law, in common law countries, they call it first principles. First principles, like what? Well, like don't talk to the police. That's the first principle. To understand simply that you don't talk is huge. Let me read something to you. I pulled it up here. Something to you. This is out of, I've got a bunch of little booklets that I've written about little things, not little things, big things, big first principles that govern everything. And if you can find the first principle that governs everything else, you don't have to worry about the details. If you have a right to remain silent, why go talking about some federal statute? It doesn't make any difference. Oh, there's plenty of them out there you can talk about. And the evil empire will try to get you wrapped up and entangled in the minutia of bureaucratic regulations. The IRS is notorious for that kind of thing. But listen to this. Now, this is from the really only two volumes of law as Americans, the fundamental volumes of law we have. There are only two. One of them is unwritten. And our Declaration of 76 calls it the laws of nature. The laws of nature. It's an unwritten volume of law. It's all around us in nature, in creation. The relationships, as William Blackstone puts it in his commentary, the relationships between things and things, things and the individual, and individuals and individuals. There's all these relationships. Everything's relational in the common law. It is not relational in the law of the city. The law of the land, everything is to protect lawful relationships and know how to deal with them. That's a big thing. Well, this law book I'm going to quote from here is called the Bible. That's the laws of nature's God that our Declaration of 76 speaks of. The laws of nature, unwritten, and the laws of nature's God, written. Those two phrases refer to the law of God in creation as he has established it, and the Bible is the law of God as he has particularly recorded it. Well, this is Proverbs. This is that second written volume. It says this, "He that keeps his mouth," that means safeguard, "he that safeguards his mouth," that Hebrew word there, shomer, "he that safeguards his mouth safeguards his life." Now that's God talking. "But he that opens wide his lips," it says, "shall have destruction." He that keeps his mouth, safeguards his mouth, safeguards his life. James, in the Newer Testament, that's the older testimony. In the Newer Testimony, James says, "Be quick to hear." Quick. That's an old English word that means lively. Be lively. The ear, you picture your ears coming alive and jumping up. Head up. You're listening. Be quick to hear, he says, and slow to speak. That's the law of our Maker. And he says if you do that, you'll get along a whole lot better. Is it true? Well, I can give you plenty of personal testimonies about that one. How true it is that a man ought to learn to shut his mouth. My father used to say to me, Brent, if you don't shut up, we'd be outside working. He said, Brent, if you don't shut up, you're going to sunburn your tongue. Well, silence is golden. There was a song like that back in the rock and roll days. Silence is golden. Oh, yeah, it was a slow song. Who sang that? Somebody can tell me. That is why you have 2 years. I get a message here that says, that is why you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. You should, therefore, the conclusion I draw from that statement is, you should listen twice as much as you talk. I get it. Okay, let me read from the laws of nature's God here again, that great law book, that second volume. If a man vows a vow unto the Lord, or swears an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word, but he shall do all that comes out of his mouth. That's out of Numbers chapter 30, verse 2. And here's another one. You shall not be slack in doing it, for the Lord your God most certainly will require it from you. That's Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 21. The four seasons, says Terry. Thank you, Terry. Silence is golden. Yeah, I remember it well. Well, they were right. Silence is golden. Well, here's another one. I will support and defend our Constitution of the United States against states against all enemies, foreign and domestic, so help me God. That is the oath of American judges, lawyers, military men, and public office holders. And this oath is not only peculiar among nations of the world, but it is sobering. Sobering. Only the world's few common law countries have such an oath. The oath taker swears no loyalty to any man or combination of men. Indeed, the oath is sworn to a set of first principles of our common law and government, put in compact draft. That's a quote from the Supreme Court. Put in compact draft. What do you think he's talking about, Justice Taft? He's talking about the Constitution of the United States. It's a brief of common law government put in first principles, put in compact draft. Listen, if you know the first principles of that brief, short, document, and brief and short it is. If you know those first principles, you'll know more than a lot of lawyers that are licensed to practice law. How do you know? Well, you've got to learn first to be quiet and read. Just relax. Get up in the morning, read. The Constitution of the United States is not the inspired Word of God. It has, in my studied opinion, flaws. But that doesn't mean that it is not substantially true. It is in first principle. Again, coming back to first principle. It is substantially true. The first principles, it is an agreement among the people of the United States as to what the law is. It is a private agreement in that respect, you see. But it's been elevated to a point where it governs the most powerful party. Who is the most powerful party? Well, we call it the government. Doesn't make a difference what you call it. They're the folks with the most force of power at their disposal. It limits them. Well, simply put, this oath we read does not bind an oath taker to any new additional duty. I've taken this oath on several occasions. Matter of fact, I was counting the other day. I can count 8 times I've taken that oath. That oath to support and defend the Constitution. And I acknowledge, if a man vows a vow unto the Lord or swears an oath to bind his soul with a bond, I'm reading from the Bible again, he shall not break his word, but he shall do all that comes out of his mouth. Because the Lord is not going to be slack, it says, to require it from him. That's the danger. That's what should be spoken of. If the Constitution of the United States is consonant with the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God, it's good. If it isn't, it's no good. And any part of it that is not, that we would find is not consonant, it's not good law. I should have known better. I'm reading a section from this booklet called Don't Talk to the Police. Don't Talk to the Police. Our Constitution's answer to its enemies. I should have known better. I'm reading my own words here. I should have known better. I had muttered the same words of bewilderment as his. Were my words sincere? You bet. How about senseless? Sure. And it took me a spell to get past it because I didn't want to think bad about all of them. It's more pleasant to think good of others. But when I hear another say, they can't do that, I savvy and say to myself, I know. You'd rather not accept it either. I mean, you'd rather not accept the truth that someone you trusted is not only untrustworthy, but worse, is downright dangerous. But absorbing the walloping blow of raw force from some policeman's or government agent's callous disregard for law can jolt a fellow's soul hard enough to knock his common sense rolling stock off his rails of reason. Soul shock, I call it. They can't do that, bewails some soul-shocked American, and then follows with an awkward, can they? And to pour fuel, these myrmidons, in doing such dastardly deeds, are convinced that using the ends to justify the means, in order to fill the wishes of the criminal law industry's lackeys, makes them patriots. That's what they think. They're off. Such are presumptive but useful sillies for freedom's enemies. Bottom line, soul shock can be a hard jolt, not only strong enough to unhinge a fellow from his reason, but also strong enough to unhinge his tongue to talk fully sincere nonsense, a dangerous thing to do. To be sure, such law-abiding soul sees the law's limits for government employees, but the unexpected stun of a law officer's disrespect of those limits can knock loose his trust, rendering him slow to acknowledge the foul human inclination to abuse power to another's hurt. The only way such an abuser can get respect. In any event, once one sees that a government employee has violated the law, it is senseless to ask whether such an hireling can, that is able to, do such a thing. Indeed, not only can he do it, but by having done so, he has proven that he can do it. But to back up, to get a fair shot at the right answer, one must at least ask the right question. And once abused, the only sensible question remaining is how should one respond to such callous abuse of government power? One action always within the American's power is to use his right not to talk. That is his right to remain silent. Nowadays, policemen and other government agents are part of a monopoly of force, ready and willing to visit violence upon the noncompliant American and against enjoyment of his constitutionally protected rights. Even so, where one is outnumbered and outgunned, it is unwise, no matter how right one thinks one is, to meet force with force. Simply put, by the time a bevy of armed officers has you surrounded, with guns drawn and billy clubs drawn, they have the drop on you, and most any plan to overpower them will fail. The only way to beat them is by truth, wisdom. Bottom line, time has come to be as wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. Not force, but finesse is needed. Do not talk. Everybody can do that. It's a matter of doing nothing. To fill this need calls for awareness of a power that cannot be taken. That is what we call an inalienable. That means you cannot be separated from it and you cannot separate yourself from it. Right. No matter how unfair the fight, this right to not talk, this right, and that is a responsibility. A lady on here one time, been a few years ago now, she called and challenged me. I said, rights are not accompanied by corresponding duties. No, rights are duties, period. That old Anglo-Germanic word, right, R-I-G-H-T, means in the old German tongue, and still in the Germanic tongues, it means duty. It's a responsibility. A right is a responsibility to exercise discernment, period. And the evil empire has twisted it into something selfish. Listen, if you have a right, it comes only from your maker. All authority, says Romans 13, is from God, period. It is delegated to you, every authority you have, everything you have. I don't care what it is. You have derived it. Somebody gave it to you, namely your maker, maybe through other people, maybe directly to you. If he gave it directly to you, it's a fundamental right. That's what we have in our Bill of Rights. And there are others besides those. And our Constitution says so. But then there are also responsibilities, rights. That's a responsibility, a jurisdiction. Right is just the old Anglo word for that Latin word jurisdiction, that Latin word authority. That's what it is. It's right. It is jurisdiction. It is the responsibility to act or to forbear from acting, respecting a given matter. I'm giving you the lawyer's definition. Things they ought to teach in law school. I don't think they teach that one. No, they do sometimes. I was taught that one. It is the right. What is jurisdiction? Well, it's right. That's the Anglo word. The right what? The right to act or to forbear from acting, respecting a given matter. That's called jurisdiction. Jurisdiction stresses the limits of that right. It has a scope. We say a scope of jurisdiction. Well, you have a scope of jurisdiction. That means a right. That means authority over your tongue. Your tongue, that small, soft member inside of your house. Your house inside of your bone house, as the Anglos used to say. That means your body, your bone house. Soft it is and small. And James the Apostle says, even though it is soft and small, it is dangerous in the extreme. Dangerous to you and dangerous to others. I'm much more afraid of a gossip whose tongue drips red with the blood of gossip than I am of a drunk with a red nose. Well, that's bad, bad on him, and can cause problems for other people. But that doesn't even begin to hold a candle to a gossip who has either no control or misuses that little tiny inconsequential member otherwise called the tongue. James the Apostle in the book of James, in the Bible, in the New Testament, says that it is set on fire. Your tongue can be set on fire from hell. And it will be used for hellish purposes if you do not exercise your jurisdiction over your tongue. That means fundamentally two things. Talk when your maker, by revelation of his will to you, when he demands that you talk. Remember, duty, right is duty. Duty only arises out of law. That's it. There is no other place duty comes from. Well, if you don't know the standards of God, again, in the fundamentals, it's not up to you to calculate, most of you, it's not even up to a theologian to do this, but some of them do it, to calculate how many angels can dance upon the head of a pin. Now, they think about those hypothetical, ridiculous things. That's impractical, it's foolish, it's a waste of time. Much of what theologians do is a waste of time because it doesn't lend itself to immediate application to enable us to live in more enjoyable lives. And following the law of God, doing the duty that arises therefrom, is enjoyable. That's the only thing that will fulfill the restlessness of the heart of man. There is nothing else. Augustine said that the heart of man, the soul of man, is restless until it finds its rest in thee, O God. And what that means is, ultimately, just do what he tells you to do. I mean, let's not get complicated about this. Well, do not talk. That's fundamental. If you don't learn how not to talk, you won't learn when to talk. I did an exercise of this when I was 19 years old. I don't know that it was the right thing to do, but I got onto this, and I knew what the Bible said. And for 30 days, I said, I'm not going to open my mouth and say one word for 30 days. And I did that for 30 days, seeing if I could discipline myself not to talk, because I felt like I was too quick to talk. Well, felt like it. No, I knew I was too quick to talk. And I did. Drove my friends crazy. I didn't cut out my social life. I just didn't say anything to see if I could do it. It was a worthwhile exercise. I don't know that it helped that much, but I'll tell you what, as bad as I am still, I'm glad I did that. I'd be a lot worse if I didn't try to exercise some discipline. Well, to feel the need calls for an awareness of power that cannot be taken. The need you have, no one can take your power to talk from you. You don't have to talk. Oh, yeah, there have been a lot of people that have been murdered because they wouldn't talk by governments. They've been tortured to try to get them to talk, and some people didn't, and they were killed. But again, I make the point. You don't have to talk if you don't want to, and if it costs you your life, you don't have to do that either. And you don't have to say what they want you to say either. I've been in court, and I watched a fellow on the witness stand one time, first witness out of the box. You know, the prosecutors in court, the best tactic is to put your what you believe is your strongest witness up front before the jury gets bored. They'll remember that first witness before they'll remember others. Phil came in, big man. I knew him. A good man, too, by the way, in chains. Chained up like an animal on his hands and feet. But he was witness against others, or supposed to be. Got on the stand, and prosecutor started asking questions and said, well, did you know the accused? Yes. Did he advise you about taxes? He was in jail for taxes. And he said, no, he didn't advise me about taxes at all. And then the prosecutor said, now, wait a minute. You agreed to come and testify for the government. He said, yes. He said, you agreed to testify to this, this, and this. He said, I agreed to testify in this court and tell the truth. And that's what I'm doing. Now, I heard later they took him back to jail and put him in a straitjacket. But he didn't say what they wanted him to say. And no matter what people do to you, you have absolute control of the government, of your tongue. And that's where government starts. Starts with your own body, your hands and your feet and your tongue. Jesus Christ warns to never square off with statist power. Matthew chapter 5, verse 39, and I'll end with this particular unpacking of his words here. Most translations say, do not resist evil. That's the Sermon on the Mount part of it, by the way. Sermon on the Mount, it's called. Wasn't really a sermon. It was just the 12 disciples. It wasn't to a massive crowd, and shouldn't be called a sermon, but it's popularly known that way. He was teaching them, the ones he had chosen, the jury of 12 that he had impaneled to witness the evidence of his messiahship and then deliver their verdict. All of them did. And by the way, all of them were murdered for their verdict, except one. And that was John the Apostle, and he died in chains and slave labor on the Isle of Patmos off the west coast of Asia Minor, near, well, at least 90 years old. Well, Jesus Christ said this to those 12 men, do not resist evil, but is better rendered, it's in the Greek tongue, the Koine Greek, better rendered, do not square off with the evil man. Do not square off with the evil man. This thing, resist, do not resist evil, well, Peter says later in the Bible, resist evil and it will flee from you. I believe it was Peter. Resist evil and it will flee from you. Well, how does that square with where Jesus Christ says, do not resist evil? Well, this is the way it squares up with that. That's a poor translation. It should say, do not square off with the evil man. Do not draw the line in the sand with somebody who's you've calculated will do evil to you, like a police officer with a gun, a club, and a German shepherd. Don't square off with him. He'll kick your can. That's what he's saying. Do not face off with such a one, including any of his minions and lackeys. Do not go toe to toe with any of them, giving physical blow for physical blow. And that's the word he uses here. The Greek word he uses here is rapizo. Rapizo. We get our word rap from that. You know, rap is harder than a slap. Well, maybe it's softer, but it's a punch. No, it's a hit. It's a strike. Do not do that with the other fellow, he says, the powerful one, more powerful than you. The word rapizo from an old Scandinavian root meaning to exchange, exchange drubbings. Drubbings, I like that word. As in a contest where men give blow for blow. Used to be very popular among the Irish. And I read the account of J.P. Martin, revolutionary soldier from Connecticut during the war for separation from Britain. And he tells the story when he was 16 years old, he was in the army, of these two Irishmen that had immigrated. And they met each other, and they were so happy to see one another over here on the other side of the Atlantic in the New World. And they'd both joined the army. And he said they decided they would take a drink and have a go at each other. And he said he'd never seen something like that. What that meant was that one man would punch the other one, hold still, and the other would punch him, and then the other man would take a turn back, and they'd do that until one of them got knocked down. Well, Jesus Christ is saying, you maybe do that with your friends. That's what they enjoyed. But do not do that with the powers that be. I like to tell my clients, well, I'll just do this or that to the judge or the officer if he does this or that. No, no, no. These are the guys that command the United States Marine Corps. These are the guys that have aircraft carriers. These are the guys that have a practical monopoly on force within the United States. So that's why Jesus Christ says this. Do not do that. And it's an intense verb form. Drubbing. Do not get into exchanging of punches like these Irishmen that J.P. Martin tells us about. Well, a rap is harder than a tap, I'm reading from what I have written here. A rap is harder than a tap, and a tap is harder than a slap, and a tab harder than a smack. Whatever the case, don't exchange blows. To resist is one thing, to square off in a Viking-like contest of matching blows is quite another. We are to resist evil, oh yeah. How do you do it? Well, one way you can do it, just keep your mouth shut. Anything you say not only can be used against you, if you get arrested, it will. If it comes to trial, it will. Trust me on that one. I shouldn't say trust me. But believe what is said, that the statistics are true. At least 60 and more like 80% of everybody in prison are there because somehow they said something or wrote something and it was used against them and got them there. And boy, does the government monopolize on you opening your mouth. Do not square off with powerful of someone who has the drop on you. James 4:7 is another good sight. Even if you do defeat an evil one at first encounter in a blow-for-blow contest, some people do that with police officers. They may defeat the police officer in first encounter, but he will return in overwhelming numbers and force. Jesus Christ says that too, Matthew chapter 12, verse 45. Therefore, good must push evil out, occupying its dwelling place, leaving the evil one no room to take up lodging. What is good? Good is doing what God tells you to do. That's why you must know. You must know when to speak. How do you know? Well, you know by your duty that arises from law. Our Maker tells us when we should speak and when we should not speak. But most folk don't go take time to really read and contemplate what he has said. And there are things you can learn from nature in that regard, that's true. But also to learn just the fundamentals. Don't get caught up in the details. Any good lawyer doesn't. Say again, Jesus Christ says to the Pharisees of his day, the Pharisees, the Babylonian Judaites, he said, you omit the weightier matters of the law. You tithe the cumin and the little mite, and you take care of all the details that you have constructed. You yourselves have man-made law. But by doing so, you made void the fundamentals of the law of God. Do not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, and murder your neighbor. Well, that's what the Messiah says. I take it he's telling us the truth, and I listen. I found what he says to be utterly true in every case. Thank you so much for letting me talk for a while, Gerard, and it's back to you.
Okay. So, hang on a minute here. Let me get back in on my wall here. Okay. Let me get rid of some of this stuff I've been playing with while Brent was talking. Oh, by the way, I did find that fella who is an ex-Texas sheriff. And he has, if you go to YouTube and put in on the search bar the title, it's former Deputy Sheriff Eddie Craig / right to travel / traffic stop script / Washington state law. And I guess that was translated from Texas law to Washington state law. So I guess, you know, they're a little different from state to state. But anyway, I studied him for a while and I like him. And he's very much into common law. And he understands why we don't have our rights. And he talks about how the school systems are set up to make us give up our rights, and it takes a long time to do, and that's what they work on, so that by the time you get out of high school, you know, or whatever, school in general, that you're willing to give up your rights, and you think that you're doing the right thing by not exercising your fundamental rights and by letting them trample on you. So he's pretty good, this guy. And if anybody, he has a script that he says you should carry with you, and you should memorize a lot of it, you know, when you get pulled over. And I think it's good advice. He's not over the top at all, you know, and he knows what he's talking about because he's been in the game a long time. So it's good stuff. Anyway, I got Dan from Carolinas. I'm going to unmute him in a second here. We don't have that many people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get in, you should get in now. So go ahead, Dan. You've been unmuted.
Very good. I just thought that tonight was a great time to, as always, every time, to hear Mr. Brent Allen Winters. And whoever sent in there about two ears and, you know, and one tongue or one mouth or whatever, I tell you, that's a nice cue to follow. Back with a little comment. It's been said that if you do get stopped, they were supposed to read you this Miranda, and they say that you have the right to remain silent. They should not bully any individual because they're stating that they have that the individual they stops, they state that you have the right to remain silent, and then they make another statement following that, and it says anything and all things that you may say can and will be used in a court of law against you, possibly. That right there looks like to me that when you see what we've seen on YouTube and some of these people that are supposed to be law officers claiming that stops a private citizen, or whether they're just, you know, running something of less than domestic, might be going to see their grandmother or grandfather or their best friend somewhere, nothing intended commercial, and traveling on the roads accordingly. You know, I thought I'd mention that because Mr. Brent just really gave us some tremendous overview, and he expounded on that really well, and so I thought I would comment on that. Actually, I'll move away from that for just a second and not be lengthy. We certainly want to, you know, express tonight our mentor, and he does so much, and he gives so much it's certainly every once in a while I can understand that if he is feeling poorly, which he is, he'd be on here if he wasn't. And we need to think about that occasionally. He gives so much to us, like Mr. Gerard and, of course, Brent, Alan Winters, and some of the other people that's so associated behind the scenes, that especially Jan. My gosh, I don't think we could do without Jan, I'll assure you, and some of the others too there. But tonight I was hoping to have a gentleman out of Carolina that Mr. Brent had, and I and him had a conference one night, and Jan laughs about that conference. And I was encouraging him to be on, and there was going to be different areas of proof that this man knows about concerning Congress, and whether they're they passed on their right and they're only one by law that should be coining monies. Instead, the Bilderbergers have been doing that, and we were temporarily, since March the 9th, 1933, supposed to be only under martial law for a short period of time, and some of that about the coinage and of monies and that's been given away, that makes us think why we shouldn't have a real strong body in various districts to put an audit on the federal government for this printing money, when in fact we are the people, and those kids that are not born yet are going to be, the way things are set up, to come back and pay for something that we might have went this weekend and got a loaf of bread and something at a convenience store somewhere, and we didn't give substance for substance, and then it's so unfair to think that we're operating still under the same thing, what was martial law, which was supposed to be only temporary, and that's when the banking holidays were set, and then March the 9th, 1933. That and some other things were what this gentleman would have spoken on, and he can really walk you through about banking and other things too, and that would be where bank loans are actually borrowing, the lending officer is borrowing your own credit and collateralizing it. When you come in, if you want $300,000 or $250,000 or $100,000 or whatever, they technically do not have that in that bank, and they collateralize it. You would probably really enjoy this gentleman from Carolina that is a colleague of mine, and Mr. Brent and I, and he one night, we really had a tremendous private conference, as we accidentally didn't get on National Liberty Life in an awkward way. We were on a conference thinking we were waiting for the National Liberty Life. No, Jan is just absolutely, laughing behind the scenes. So I'll close right there. There's other people, and let's to remind all of us to think about, and if somehow we can send a nice little message to Mr. John, and especially, I know Mr. Gerard was talking about some papers and things that, no question about it, as professional as Mr. John is, he will be, carrying out probably either tomorrow or the next couple of days. So let's keep them in our hearts and our prayers, and all individuals that contribute. I'll turn it back over.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, let's see the next victim. It looks like Rutham. No, wait a minute now. Why didn't it go? Stupid thing didn't work. No, I might have knocked somebody out because it's not going in the order. So it's now Robin from Ohio.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, and by the way, if I knock somebody out, get right back in. We only have another two people in there right now anyway, so.
Okay.
Go ahead, Robin. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. I have a question. I am learning. I'm new at this, but I think I'm getting the hang of it. As far as I have a pending court case going on with my daughter and vaccinations. She was granted sole custody, legal custody, and makes all medical decisions. And there's a little part in the court order that says father can get a second opinion at his own expense, and that's all it says about that. Well, he's taken her back to court for custody, and they ruled in Ohio that there's no change of circumstance, so no custody change. At that hearing, the father added another motion to enforce that second opinion. So they're trying to have the doc, they brought in a doctor, and they're trying to enforce his recommendation to vaccinate. So I'm just trying to prepare because February 14th was when the attorneys presented their closing arguments in writing, whether to, we said dismiss because of jurisdiction, and the father's side says they have a right to enforce the second opinion for the health of the child, whatever. So depending, we're waiting now for this magistrate to make a decision.
How old is this child?
The child's 5.
Oh, and did I understand you right? You said who had the sole ability to
my
make
daughter.
This?
My daughter.
Oh,
she
so it's your
soul.
Daughter's child.
Yes.
She's the mother. Okay.
Yes.
I for a minute there, I thought the child had the sole right. I understand.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it was my own misunderstanding, but.
So she never married the father. She decided not to. So we are in juvenile court here in Ohio because they are not they never were married.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to get this straight. So with jurisdiction, I have to first be the plaintiff, like get it back into me being the sovereign or whatever. But you know, all these attorneys, they put down Supreme Court cases and rules and statutes. So when you're a sovereign or when you're the plaintiff and you go ahead and do a counterclaim, this is my understanding anyway, do you not need to do those Supreme Court cases? And do I look at the rules of juvenile court, or do I look at the rules for the federal procedures, or do the state?
Well,
look at
what
order?
First of all, you know, if you're fighting jurisdiction and you're fighting, you know, a violation of fundamental rights or due process or anything like that, you can move that to the federal court for cause. And I don't know, I look at family court is really not a real court as far as I'm concerned. And you can move anything out of there. Now, juvenile court, I don't know about juvenile court. I suspect it's the same thing, though. I mean, you can move it up the line. I don't think that you have to cooperate with them. I think you could make those claims and bring it into a higher court, you know, with different judges. I mean, a lot of times, I know in like the family court, you know, sometimes they don't even have, they're not real judges even. You know what I mean? They're retired people, magistrates or whatever that are there. It's more of an arbitration. Now, that's another point too. Most of the time you can move these things over to arbitration with a professional arbitrator, and sometimes you do better there than in court. If you can get the other side to agree to, and you know that you're going to arbitrate it between, you know, the mother and the father. I won't say husband and wife because they're not married. You
is
know,
that like
and,
a mediator?
Yeah, mediator. That's right. You can. They'll often give in to that because it takes the load off of them and all the rest of the stuff takes it out of that court. And what happens is, you know, when you agree to a mediator, then you're basically agreeing to what that mediator ends up coming to a conclusion on. You know what I mean?
Well, so, the court order actually says if they can't agree on something, then they go to a mediator. And they went one time, and the father quit, and he said he won't go back. So,
well, you could demand this latest thing that he's doing. I don't know why couldn't you go to a mediator? You know,
yeah.
I mean, is he paying for any of the support of the child?
He pays child support, yes, and he has visitation, and that's all he gets is visitation. He doesn't get any say in anything, really. I mean, if she wants to include him, she can, but, you know, it's just, I'm just confused on how jurisdiction works. I guess that's my...
Well, look, they're supposed to prove they have it, but they can't rule on it. And it has to come from a higher authority than them. And they can't say, I have it because I'm wearing these robes. And they always screw it up. That's the problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to challenge jurisdiction, you know, you get it in properly and get it in the court. And they may not, they may screw it up. But if you get a good paper, you know, there's always a chance, you know, that you can go back and fix it. But and it puts it on the record also, you know, so that God forbid there's anything that goes worse, you know, there's lawsuits and things like that that they become liable for, especially when they violated your right to that particular due process, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, you know, all of a sudden the father wants to enforce something that, you know, for what reason? I mean, all of a sudden he's interested in, I mean, you think that he's really concerned, or you think that this is just a game he's playing in order to...
I think he's just using, well, I think it's been an issue since the very first trial when the child was one, when they gave my daughter sole custody. Vaccines were an issue then, and he keeps finding reasons to bring that back up, and we've already discussed it the first trial, so that's another thing. But you know, when I mean, how do I
listen? If it was an issue and he's bringing it back up, why don't you just refer back to what the other court said? Look, we already discussed this. There's nothing's changed. Why should he get? You know, it's like double jeopardy. He's how many times is he going to go back and do this? You know,
right.
it's like the Congress with the president. They're going to impeach him 1,000 times. You know, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I would just say, look, it's already been decided by the court, and I don't know what he's trying to do, but I think this is just malicious, you know, litigation in order to wear us out and weaponize the court. That's what I would say.
Yeah, it sounds like that to me. I just wasn't sure how. What proves that I have jurisdiction? Just because they gave her that right?
Yeah, basically. It's in the paper. Okay. It was granted, blah, 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 you know.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the blood bond is the most important. I mean, he's the father and she's the mother, and along with that comes a certain, foundational, principles, you know, and I guess whoever screams loudest and asserts themselves the more and convinces the judge or whatever, that's who prevails, you know. But
yeah,
technically it should be 50-50, but you know it's not, you know.
Right,
and I'll be honest
right.
with you, the worst thing in court today is for a white male usually is very discriminated against. So I'm surprised they're even entertaining his thoughts, you know what I mean? But
I know.
I would go back to the other court and say, look, nothing's changed. I mean, right now there's this whole vaccine issue is on a nationwide thing, so maybe he feels like he's in good standing to bring it up again, you know?
Yeah,
since this is what's in the news. But I don't know, you know, you want to say enough, but you don't want to say too much. So just be careful how you tread there. I think the easiest way is to say, look, we've already discussed this since he was one, and nothing's changed, and the child's in good health, and there's really no reason to keep bringing this up. And I believe he's just doing this frivolous, you know, litigation to use the court as a weapon. And that would be my, you know, off the bat, that would be the first place that I would go.
Okay.
All right. I don't know.
Okay. I appreciate it. That helps. Thank you.
Okay, Robin. Have a good night.
Okay. You too. Bye.
Yeah. Next, we have Terry from New Jersey. Go ahead, Terry. How you been?
I've been pretty good. I found something interesting with regard to the discussion earlier regarding not talking to the cops. It was actually a case involving a lawyer from Philadelphia, and it says here, a Philadelphia lawyer will receive a $30,000 settlement in a suit claiming her constitutional rights were violated when she was handcuffed and detained in a holding cell for refusing to answer police officers' questions during a traffic stop. Philadelphia lawyer Rebecca Massara settled the federal case last month, report New Jersey Advanced Media and the Associated Press. The July 6th deal, which would not receive, had not received judicial approval, was reported in New Jersey's civil settlements on Wednesday. It says here, New Jersey did not admit wrongdoing in the settlement, which stems from action taken by New Jersey State Troopers in October 2015 when they pulled Massara over for alleged speeding, New Jersey Media had reviewed. Massara had provided her driver's license, registration, and insurance information to the trooper, but did not answer when asked questions such as, do you know you've been pulled over tonight? When one of the troopers advised Massara she would be arrested if she continued to keep quiet, Massara said she was a lawyer and didn't have to answer questions. The troopers arrested Massara anyway and read Miranda right to her, advising her that she had the right to remain silent.
Well, that's pretty funny because this whole right to remain silent, and I don't remember which state it was, but I think the Supreme Court made a stupid ruling on it. They said you don't get the right to remain silent unless you specifically proclaim it when the cop comes up. You have to mention the Fifth Amendment and that you wish to remain silent, or you don't have that right. Like in other words, they're saying if you just are silent, he doesn't have to give you that right. You have to specifically say that you're exercising your Fifth Amendment rights not to incriminate yourself, which that's a bunch of baloney. This is how ridiculous our courts are today, you know. So,
Gerard.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot to. I probably ought to throw that in as a proviso because that's the state of things right now. And that was a case down in Texas. Mm-hmm. And the name of it, I think, is Texas versus Salinas. His name was Salinas. Mm-hmm. There was a party. And at the party, there was a murder. And nobody knew who did it. It was a shotgun murder. Uh-huh. A bunch of young people. Oh, yeah. Well, a couple of years later, of course, the investigation just plodded along. They called this fellow in named Salinas, said, will you come down to the police station? We want to talk to you. So he came down to the police station. Well, they asked him all sorts of questions, and he answered them, sitting at the table. And then finally one of the officers, and we don't know, I assume he was lying to him. Officers do that, of course, to try to weasel some information out of you. He said, well, you know, the ballistics on the shotgun that was used in that murder matched the ballistics of your shotgun. And all of a sudden, after all that questioning and all those answers, Salinas looked down at his feet and shuffled his feet around, and he didn't say anything. And
he got smart real fast, right? But he didn't say there is no ballistics on shotguns.
No, that'd be a good one. Yeah, that's a good point, Gerard. Well, anyway, so at the trial, they went through the trial, the murder trial, they charged him, and in closing argument, the state's attorney said, well, it came out in the evidence that the officer said when he asked him questions, he answered all of them until he asked the question about, or made the point about ballistics, and he just looked down his feet and shuffled his feet and appeared guilty. Well, the jury convicted him. And his lawyers appealed, and they appealed up, 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 and all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. I don't know how, who won and lost on that way up, but finally got there. And the question was, did he have the right to remain? Could it be used against him? Because the law in America is, and still remains, that a prosecutor cannot use your exercise of a fundamental right against you in his arguments or in the trial in any way. Especially, usually it's in closing arguments. Like this guy did. He said, oh, he looked down his feet, and he shuffled his feet around, and he looked guilty. Well, they said that if that's a mistrial, you can't do that. And that's always been the law in America. And the Supreme Court came back, that was a split decision, I think, and they said, well, no, if you don't claim the Fifth Amendment when they ask you a question, you don't get it. You've got to say, I stand on the right to remain silent, or I take the Fifth, or I'm not going to answer that and on the grounds that it may incriminate me. You have to say something that relates back to the Fifth. That's what they said, or you don't get the right. And so that was kind of new. So I say to people, I have a friend in California that tells his clients, and I've done this too, just if somebody asks you a question in the government, say objection, Fifth. Objection, Fifth. That's all you got to say. Memorize that. In other words, you're bringing up the Fifth, you're objecting, you're not talking. And that if you don't want to talk, you've got to say that now. Don't forget to say it. Objection, Fifth. I take the Fifth. That's a nice one. I take the Fifth. I'm not answering questions. One guy says this way, I don't answer questions. But you have to say then, I take the Fifth, or right. I rely on the Fifth. I'm stressing that point because that apparently is the law now, the law, the application of law, I should say, in America, and that's what the courts are doing. I hope they get away from it, but there it is.
I had heard, Brent, before you go, somebody, maybe they're misapplying this interpretation of the Supreme Court, and they said if you're going to take the Fifth, you have to take it all the way through. You can't answer some and then take the Fifth on other ones. You have to take the Fifth on all of them.
Oh, no. No, and whoever's pushing that is the evil empire, because that'll get you in trouble.
Yeah, I would guess so.
That's called, don't believe that one. And the government may be pushing it, I don't know, because if the law calls that a blanket Fifth. And if you, for example, get on the witness stand, and a prosecutor or somebody asks you a question, and you say, I'm not answering any questions, the judge will say, you either answer the question, or I'm going to hold you in contempt and put you in jail and put the jailhouse key in your pocket. You can get out anytime you want. All you got to do is agree to do what I say. That, the judge won't advise you. He'll just say, answer the question. Well, what you do is this. You don't take the blanket Fifth. You never say, I'm not going to answer any questions. Now, this is on the witness stand, understand. If you're with a cop, you can just say, I'm not talking. You're not under oath. That's a different situation. But a blanket Fifth in court, you can choose, no matter where you are, which questions to answer and which questions not to answer. If you're on the witness stand, just remember this. Excuse me. I'm eating jalapenos. That's getting in my throat. Oh, man. Anyway, if you are on the witness stand and you're under oath, you're required to listen to every question and then choose whether or not you want to answer that particular question. Never say on the witness stand, I'm not answering any questions, I'm not talking. The judge can come after you for that, and he's not required to explain to you what I just explained, that you have to listen. In other words, you could say something like this, a judge, I will listen to every question and decide whether or not I want to answer it. That's the proper response. This is dangerous business. And that's why it's important. It's important. It's always best if you're not in the trenches alone. If you've got somebody alongside with you, a paracletos that's alongside with you, kind of pumps you up a little bit, you're in battle at that point. And, you know, they used to say of the German soldiers in World War I, they'd come across no man's land arm in arm sometimes. Arm in arm. Couldn't even shoot their weapons. Why? To keep each other from running backwards. There's something about having your buddy with you or somebody who's your friend with you that does give you moral support to do your duty. when it comes to your tongue and the duty you have to talk or not to talk, depending upon the discernment that your Maker gives you for the moment, arising from your understanding of His law. It's nice to have somebody with you who's not right down in the dirt and not suffering like you're suffering, say, well, I advise you probably not say anything here. That's what lawyers do. That's what they're supposed to do. It's unnerving. It's an ordeal to be on the witness stand. And I've been on the witness stand in that situation, and I've jumped up and said, Judge, permission to talk to my lawyer after a prosecutor asked me a question. I'd run down off the witness stand, and my lawyer would jump up, and he'd put his arm around me, and we'd have a little powwow with our heads together. Because I needed somebody to say, should I remain silent or should I talk on this question? What do you think? Those kind of things. One time, a prosecutor asked me a question, and it was about one of my clients. And I got brain lock because of all the things that were happening in the courtroom. Well, it's nice to have somebody sitting down there who's getting the big picture, see? And he's not the one under the gun, so he can think about, well, I wouldn't answer that question if I was him. Well, so it's up to me, though. When you're on the witness stand, it's up to you to make the decision. And it's up to you also to say, I need to talk to my lawyer, if you have one. And you need to take your time. Don't let them hurry you. They'll try to, on cross-examination, they'll try to steamroll you up just like a piston going up and down. Boom, 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 and they want to get that engine going. Now you just answer my questions, yes, no, boom, boom. Don't do that. Stay in control, and the way you do that is by taking your time, your sweet time, and think about each question. But to sum up, don't take a blanket fifth. Don't say on the witness stand, I'm not going to answer any of your questions. You can do that to a cop. And the other thing is, if you're with a cop or on the witness stand, you must reference the Fifth Amendment somehow, the right to remain silent, in order to enjoy that right. Go ahead. Back to you, George.
Well, that's pretty powerful advice, because to me, if you go, Judge, I need to talk to my lawyer, and you get up out of the witness stand down by your judge, you're taking somewhat of the control away from the prosecutor when you do that.
Oh, yeah, he thinks he wants to get on a roll, and that stops him right there.
I'd do it every second question.
and you may tick off the jury doing that, but and now if you're in front of the grand jury, same thing. Well, lawyers can't go in the grand jury room. The law says no. So I've sat outside grand jury room, and my man go in. Of course, he's unnerved. He couldn't sleep the night before. I could hear him praying. I stayed in the motel room with him. He'd pray all through the night because they were after him. And I sat outside the grand jury room, and I said, every time they ask you a question, you come out and talk to me and tell me what the question is, and I'll tell you what to say. And in every case, I told him to say, objection fifth. But you'd think that's easy, but boy, when you're under the gun and you're the man that's, you're in battle at that point. You're the boxer in the ring, and you need that guy over in the corner pumping you up, telling you, relax, do this. No, you're not seeing this. I'll tell you what I'm seeing. It's all that kind of thing, because this is trial by battle. We live in a common law country. It's battle when you're talking about juries and courtrooms. This is our answer to trial by battle. This is battle by trial. I got it backwards. It's battle by trial, and this is our answer to trial by battle, what we used to call the duel. That's a nasty way to settle things, although there was a time in our country when that was very popular. Very bloody. And even if you win, you'll never get over what you did to the other fella. And you took away a woman's husband and a children's father. And that's an ugly way to do things. It doesn't work. It does not work. So we have in our common law what we call battle by trial. And by the way, the rules are the same. It used to be always trial by combat, as they used to call it. Centuries ago. But the rules were the same. Notice the opportunity to show up at the time and the place of the contest, default if you don't show, and they were very strict, very strict. But we do that now, but it's still tough. It's combat. And it's according to the rules, supposedly. No sucker punches, no hitting below the belt. Hard blows are permitted, but not foul ones, as the Supreme Court has said. Well, that's where we are. And by the way, that's the foundation of our freedoms. We fight in America. They don't do that in other countries. You just go into the tribunal. It's not a trial. It's an inquisition. It's an inquisitional system. The law of the city is inquisitional. And if you've heard of inquisitions, you know what that means. That means that the ends justifies the means, and we do whatever we want to do to get the truth out of you. You want to know what inquisition is like? In the Roman system, just go to the gospel records and read about the Roman trial of Jesus Christ, and you'll see what inquisition is. Starting from the pretrial procedures before Pilate, the governor, who had all the authority of the emperor, and when he got done cross-examining Jesus Christ, he ordered that he be taken out and scourged, and then let go or whatever. Why? It did the same thing to Paul the Apostle in the book of Acts. That was the Roman system. That's the way it is all over the world. Because it doesn't matter in the Roman system how the information is obtained that the powerful party wants, called the state. The only thing that matters is that we get it. That's why in South America they're known for attaching electrodes to your genitals and trying to get you to say what they want you to say. I mean, I understood that as a kid growing up. I didn't understand the difference between the law of the land, our common law, and the law of the city, but that's the difference. Torture is not a part of our legal tradition. Waterboarding is not a part, and those that want to do those kind of things will suffer the consequences of what they do to other people. Those are the rules of war, common law. You don't torture people, period. If you got to kill them, well, that's a different matter. If they have to be executed because of the law of treason, well, that's a different matter. But torture, never, never does God ordain torture. You can look high and low in our history, in our common law, in the Bible. You don't find it anywhere.
Yeah, and they've also done studies that show that they get bad information that way, that they have better ways of getting information. More flies with honey than vinegar. So
good point. Good point. Yeah. So. But that's our common law, right? And right to remain silent, by the way, is a part of our common law tradition, the law of the land. It does not exist in the rest of the world, which is almost all the rest of the world. So to have the right, as Jesus Christ said, he didn't say. He said nothing at his inquisition. He retained control over his tongue, and he did not speak. As a lamb, it says, to the slaughter. Fascinating accounts. You can read about it in the gospel records. Back to you, Jordan.
Thank you, Brent. And he did get slaughtered, too. But, Okay. Terry, that was probably way more than you expected on that question, huh?
Yeah, and there's just one thing I want to add from this article. Massara said she was a lawyer and didn't have to answer questions. Troopers arrested Massara anyway and read Miranda rights to her, advising her that she had the right to remain silent. A police supervisor later ordered Massara's release. This was after they put her in handcuffs. So ultimately, she got $30,000 out of this thing. So it's probably a good thing that she was a woman. Otherwise, they probably would have cracked her skull open.
Yeah, and she was a lawyer, too. I mean, they got to have... That's kind of stupid. Don't go messing with lawyers.
Yeah, and it just shows you the kind of training that these cops get.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I don't know. Well, we only have one person left, so if nobody else gets in, we're going to have an early night here because I don't really have that much stuff to talk about just to hear myself ramble. I mean, I could ramble, but you'll be sick of me by the time the 30 minutes is up, so... Anybody else wants to get in the queue, now's the time. I have Jerry Talley in the queue. I don't know. Hey, Jerry, what I'm going to unmute you. Let me know what state you're in.
Hello?
Yes.
We're in Colorado Springs.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'm watching it on his machine tonight, but this is JoJo Baby or Eddie Joe.
Oh, yeah, I remember JoJo Baby. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So how are you gentlemen tonight?
Very good. All bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for a chain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Okay, so I just kind of wanted to make a couple of comments, and then I want to do my question at the end because so I can take my notes on it and stuff. But I don't know about Mark Victor. I didn't see about him, but Eddie Craig is the one that you were referring to, and mm-hmm. and I'll tell you what, he does give some sound advice, and I have had instances, except for the cops that are brutal. I mean, I've had them yank me out of my car. I've had them, you know, take my stuff from me. I've had them threaten to throw me in jail and impound my dog, and you know, all kinds of crazy stuff like that. But I
So you're a good mind canary for us. You take these different narratives and try them, and if you get rolled on the ground, we won't use that one, right?
You know, they've done some bad stuff. You know, you said it was lucky she was a woman, but every time I've come in contact with the Colorado Springs Police Department, it's been brutal. They like to tase and mace me and beat me up because you can't put your hands on me and not expect a response because I have PTSDs. And so it's been kind of a violent 20-some-odd years with these people. But I have, in a lot of cases, they just looked at me and they had to go away. They had nothing. I gave them nothing. They had nothing. So I suggest if you can get to Eddie Craig, please do. He has got some wonderful advice. And it goes like this. Just because you're pleading the fifth don't mean you have to go deaf and dumb. Okay, mm-hmm. Because that does raise the suspicions. But whatever comes out of your mouth should cover or be focused on three different things. That's protecting your rights, invoking your rights, or demanding your rights. So if they say, oh, do you know why I stopped you?
I've listened to Eddie Craig, and I have not recently, but I've been through all his stuff. I was into him pretty heavily for a little while.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things he says, if you follow my script,
yep.
He says, I'm setting up the prosecutor. You're not trying to case out there on the road. He says, if you say these things, when you get to court, the prosecutor is going to know that he's got nothing.
Right, so, because, you know, the thing about it is if they want to hurt you and take your vehicle, they're going to. So don't resist.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Just don't, because if you have your ducks in a row, you got your butt covered anyway. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I thought he was highly. And the other thing about that is you are required in most states to state your name. So if you're just going to clam up, that's not cool, because you are required to state
your
name.
Yeah, to identify yourself, right.
And your birthday. In some states, want your residence. Now, I don't think Colorado and Texas are one where you have to give your residence,
mm-hmm.
but you have to give your name and your birth date, and you don't have to give it in any other form except vocal. If you're not lying to them, and please don't ever lie to the police. I mean, this makes things worse, but you have to tell them who you are. And so that is required, whether you're under arrest or you're under detention, investigatory detention, or you know, just even under the traffic stop. So that was pretty cool. And, you know, another person that I have reverence for is Mark Stevens. He's pretty knowledgeable.
I remember Mark Stevens. I went through a lot of these guys way back when. This is like a while ago.
Yeah, this is a little bit. And he's not so much on traffic stops as he is to when you get into court and how to beat the tickets when you get into court. So
right.
That's pretty cool. So here recently, my friend here, or my friend, I have a friend. I think I have a friend. Okay, anyway, so, but there's some things that have been coming up. So I've been studying the government by consent course and different things in the civil. And I went into the first part where you challenged jurisdiction and was thinking I understood what an affidavit is, or a statement of truth, or an affirmation. And so I was trying to figure out the difference between these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite interesting to think that you know something and then you don't once you start picking it apart.
Right.
So the affidavit, I always thought that if you're the sovereign and there is nobody above you, then why would you have to get a notary public or somebody else to verify or justify? So I was under the impression that I believed and would hold up for me because I have that. I have those kind of conchos, you know what I mean? To have somebody to verify, but you can put under there, you can put under penalty of perjury underneath the signature, and it makes it as if it is a sword. binding, because under penalty of perjury, only a live human child of God can proclaim that under penalty of perjury. Because of course we know a dead entity, a corporation, as such, it's dead. So you can't interact with it until it makes you dead. I told my friend, I was like, that's kind of funny though, because they literally want you to die to defend yourself. So when you go into court and you start playing on their level, that's basically what you do. You die. You die to their whims. And I know there's only one person, God, can take my time from me. He said, there isn't anyone out there that can give you a second or take a second from you. So I don't plan on letting him kill me in court anymore. But I got on an Indian site, and I was really surprised to see how much of our law like coincides with India's law, and you know, some of the especially like the UK or the Europe and stuff. You know how centuries old traditions and stuff just kind of followed us all here to America. But in that site that I went to, it was talking about the affidavit and how it must be handwritten, because when a body handwrites it, they're basically putting their scribe down, or they're subscribing to it, to accept full accountability. And I said, wow, I thought that was odd, because you never see these judges or these district attorneys or whatever, they don't do affidavits and different things, because they can't. Because they can't. How can they? You know, they're not alive. It has to be done by a live person. And they just can't do it. And that's like when you ever ask them, you know, to put that under penalty of perjury, they won't do that either. I thought that was pretty, you know.
Well, most of the time, especially in like an IRS case, but even in a traffic stop or whatever, they don't fill out sworn statements, you know, notarized sworn statements. They don't ever swear to what they're saying.
Ever.
They know that puts them at a certain risk, especially if you can prove that they lied, you know what I mean?
Right.
So if they didn't swear and they lied, they say, "Well, I didn't swear to it. I was just kidding."
Right. You know what I mean? And that comes under the Nisi Prius courts, because back in the olden days, a court of record, the judge or the clerks of the court, they would have to write this stuff out. They would have to write it out by hand. It was the long hand. Mm-hmm. You know, and so whenever you're in these lesser courts and stuff, and you start to demand these notes, these little notes and things that they just kind of fling this way and that way, they don't hold any weight or anything. Although it's just like a touch, it's a touch. That's why you won't find a lot of the record or what goes on in court actually, because they don't have to. You know, they don't have to keep track of it. They just have these little footnotes and stuff, and they just write exactly what they want in there. But and then deal about the martial law, you know, with the banks. Mm-hmm. They I guess you can declare martial law when you're in a state of emergency, right? And that's what happened with the bankers' holidays and everything shutting down, that they never lifted. It was that they went into martial law. But if you look at our history, it's kind of funny how we keep ourselves in states of emergency just long enough to get back into it to still try to cover over this martial law thing. You know, and for them to be able to justify. If I can't remember too many years that ever went by that we weren't involved in some kind of war. And even though it might not be on our territory, I think they can try to claim that stuff. And
well, I think every president signed a state of emergency since Roosevelt, since the Second World War. They kept us in a state of emergency. When the new guy came in, he signed it. And look, that's not even legal. As a matter of fact, I think, if I remember right, when we were studying the militia clauses with Brent and that, that if the local court was open, they couldn't hold you to martial law. In other words, if there was no active fighting going on within so many miles of where the court was, and if the court was open and operating, then you got the Constitution. You didn't get martial law. I'm pretty sure that's what I heard. So that means, look, they're not operating. They're picking, they're cherry picking from their own rules what they'll follow and what they won't follow.
Yeah.
And the average person is, we've been so dumbed down, we don't even realize when they're abusing us and not even following their own rules, so to speak.
Right.
So
that's
why this goes on.
Yep. They're not following their rules. So So I'm not an angel, right? And I got to experience firsthand in my life, very late in life, probably just about 5 years ago, my first prison, my first time in prison.
I guess you're never too old to have a new experience, huh?
I know. You know, it's on my bucket list anyway. I said, dang, I might as well go. And I've done it, okay, and I'm cool with that.
You know what? It would probably be a good place to get away from all the hullabaloo of the family life with kids and their grandkids and this and that. You know, sitting in jail might actually be a little refreshing if it wasn't for all the bad other stuff that goes on around there.
Well, you know what? Other than the it says here, because of the Geneva Convention, there's not supposed to be any torture, but there is torture in there. It just takes a different form, and it's really mental. So if you have any pride in yourself, or you have even like 3 brain cells that work, it'll play on you in a psychological way. And it sucks.
Well,
but
being locked up in the first place is hard enough, I think. I mean, I can't imagine.
I'm a hermit, so.
My wife would be happy. All she needs is her crocheting and something to read, and she'd be
something to read. Yeah, I was reading like 3 books at a time, but they make you work like 18 hours a day in the kitchen for your scent and different things. So, but you get ice cream on Fridays, and you can share a movie with your roomie. So it's like really cool. So what happened is I came off and I was on parole. Okay. And they've set up parole to look like this. The parole officer can do whatever, and I mean in whatever they see fit. And I went, what? I said, what? I don't think so. I said, they have to have parameters. They have to have rules. They can't just do whatever they want. But we have been conditioned to be subservient to authority and all that crazy stuff. Like, don't talk back to your teachers. Be quiet. A child should be seen and not heard. And, all these great, wonderful stifles that they put on us as children and stuff. It doesn't have to be. And let me tell you something. Them judges don't like it when you assert yourself. And if you don't have your T's crossed and your I's dotted, they will hurt you bad. They will hurt you. They will. And they can be because they have guns and implements of Owie and all that other good stuff. However, let me get back. I digress. So one of the other notes that came along with that Banker's Holiday and stuff, it's a book called The Truth and Money. It is by Theodore R. Thorin and Richard F. Warner. I believe the Theodore Thronin guy was in on the creation of Jekyll Island, and so he lays out in this book a Truth in Money exactly how our factual banking works, and it works like that. They have to keep 10% on means, but all the rest of it they can loan out, so they don't have to have it there. So if you have a $100 check and they cash your check, they can take your $100 check and they can borrow out $90 of it to somebody, and then they can borrow out whatever 10% is off of that, then they could set it. My eyes were open when I read this book. I went, oh, that is a trip. I would have never thought. Let's see. And about the don't answer questions. When you speak to the police, I found that a better way is to say it than I don't answer questions, because they'll ask something stupid and, you know, you'll get to find yourself talking to them and it's like answering questions. So you kind of make yourself look like an ass. But if you go, there are some questions I just don't answer, you know, so it leaves you open to be chatty if you want to, because you don't want to look like, you know, the Unabomber or something, hiding something. But then it gives you the authority to pull back and then not choose a question. And sometimes I'll ask you something and I'll just go, no, thank you. And that always throws them off. No, thank you.
Well, okay. You know, look at, that reminds me of our mentor there, Bill Thornton.
Yeah.
He says, if you don't remember anything else, he said, just say I object, because that, you know, put your objection on it. And if the judge wants to know why, you say, because it's not my will.
Yeah, it's my wish. That's my wish.
Yeah.
Because, you know, who are we? Who are we, Jerry? We're royalty, baby. We are the upper crust. You know what I mean? And so they want us to think they got authority, but just because they use force, just because they have guns, just because there are more of them, and you have to be diplomatic in those arenas, that doesn't equate to authority. It doesn't equate to jurisdiction. It doesn't equate to them trespassing on my life. So, yeah, yeah. Okay, so wait, I lost one of my papers. But the reason why I chimed in, is because I'm interested, it's on the back side, for this, the court, the juror.
What are you talking about? Oh, you're interested in what? In the indictment we're going to do, you mean?
Well, it kind of had to do with the IRS, and I really haven't had much problem. I don't believe in paying taxes, so I haven't really... I don't have anything against them, but the juror's advocate that says when you take the civil course and the dang it, I'm missing the word right now. I don't know why it's escaping my brain. The position. Come on, Jerry, help me out. That you don't know either. The position that you that it says that you could possibly be in a position for that makes like anywhere from.
Oh, you mean for when you're doing a habeas corpus, a next friend?
No. It's a position that it's in the front part of the website. The front part of the website.
Oh, to be an administrator to the jury.
A juror administrator. Dang it, I couldn't think of that. Yeah, so I am extremely interested in that. But other than taking the courses and stuff, and then I've heard in a couple of the Monday night meetings that there's on-the-job training, so I might not have to wait till I'm all the way through, but what would you just...
Well, any on-the-job training, what he's talking about, is after we break into the courts.
Okay.
You know, we will have the authority, and if you have that position... You know, the plan is that NLA will be an information site for anybody that needs it, and we will help out, you know, jury administrators, you know, do the right thing. They'll have as a resource, that they use us as a resource for training. I mean, they have all kinds of resources, but of course, you know, I'm sure the advice that they give is the wrong advice, right?
Well, so, you know, when you're all in the same bed except you. all those guys are in the same bed and you're standing in the cold, yeah, they make the right choices for each other.
But there's going to be like 4 jury administrators per county, unless it's a huge county, you might need more. Like you get into New York City, you know, there's a lot of people in a small area, so you're going to need more administrators, right? And more grand jury
members. Yeah, we're here in Colorado Springs, and I got to looking at the roster and stuff, and I think the closest to the actually to Colorado Springs is Arapahoe County, Aurora County. So that's up in Denver. So there's not really many positions here. I mean, I don't think there's many people here, like, in this neighborhood. So, but how do you break into that? I mean, like, what do I need to do for the steps forward other than taking the course in my own studies?
Well, no, when you signed up, you checked the box that said you want to be a administrator.
I think I did, but I was scared, so I might have not checked it.
So go back and check it. You can go back in there and go over your information and modify it and check it. And then what happens is we have you registered in that particular area, that county.
Okay.
And so it's kind of first come, first serve.
Right.
But like John says, if somebody comes in and they don't have credentials, they're not educated, they didn't take the courses, you know, they may get the job by default if nobody else is there. But if there's two people and one of them has taken the courses, well, then we have no choice but to award it to the person that took the information courses, you know.
Right. Okay.
So that puts you in kind of an upfront position, let's say, you know. And you know, as it is right now, there's not too much competition because you need four per county, and you know, we have what is it, 13,000 something counties in the United States. So
right.
We only have 1,500 people right now, so we have a fraction of what we're going to need. So hopefully it takes off. But yeah, no, if you just go back and check the box, and then whatever happens, look, we don't know exactly what's going to happen because we don't know exactly when it's going to happen or to what extent. But,
right.
You know, we're going to roll with the punches with that as far as, you know, coming in and asserting ourselves and taking the system over. You know, it'd be good to have a bunch of people that have taken those courses, the civic course and constitution course. It just makes life easier. And it's a no-brainer that you would get the position if you did that.
Okay.
So, other than that.
When you say we're going to blow in and take the system over, at least a corner of it, right, to call our own, that's a huge, huge job. To take the whole system over, because
that's what we're going to do. We're going to take the whole system over.
You were going to take it all?
You can't be just a little bit pregnant, and it's kind of like that. You're either going to go with common law or not. The trouble, the problem that we would have is not, look, when the system comes in, the system's coming in. How good that system is going to depend upon the people that fill that vacuum when the deep state people are driven out. There's going to be positions open, and if we don't get good people in, we're going to end up with a system that's as bad as it was today or worse. So
right.
That's why we're working. I don't think this system is long for the world because people are waking up. They want change, but the thing is you know how that change comes and how to control it, and you know that's what we're about, trying to make sense out of this before it's chaos, you know.
Okay.
So anyway, I got a couple more people in there.
One more question real quick. Just one. So if I've got code enforcement on my butt and they're all coming in with the threats and stuff and they haven't written out the criminal summons or whatever because they wanted the abatement done first, but I'm not doing it. Should I go ahead and put my paperwork in now and just try to name those involved? Or should I wait for the summons itself?
Well, wait a minute. They verbally told you things? Code enforcement?
So the code enforcement guys come over there and they had a few conversations, but he's given notice to abate. Okay, so there's been some paperwork that says notice to abate and you have this much time. And then so the last conversation that came in goes a little bit like this. Well, I guess I'm just going to have to issue you a ticket then.
So right. Should I wait? Abate by the time that he gives you, you have a ticket.
Just be prepared.
Yeah, I mean, you could put it in any time you want. It doesn't matter that whether they gave you a ticket or not. If they're giving you a notice to abate, that is a ticket as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. But it doesn't have the proper names. You said the administrator of code, and then the only name on there is dude's name. But he said that there was a complaint from somebody else. So could I put this in under trespass on me and conspiracy?
Yeah, you could do that. I mean, in other words, they're operating on an anonymous complaint. Is that they're not going to tell you who it was,
well,
obviously.
Yeah, they're not going to tell us. But we could get to know because they went with this anonymous system now. You can tell on your neighbors anonymously, but I know you can get the information. But, yeah, and then it sounded like he went around for the
neighbors.
Well,
you know, the quickest way to fix that is,
okay.
I don't know what they're complaining about, but the thing is sometimes people get ridiculous, and if you don't let them in and you don't give them too much information, you could say, what I would do is say, look, that's a lie, that's a false statement, and I can prove it. And you can't have an anonymous system that protects a criminal. So
right.
I have evidence that that's a false statement, and I'm coming down, and I want the name of that person because I'm putting a lawsuit in. And a lot of times that gets back to the person, and they get scared and they withdraw their complaint, you know, because that, you know, you expect kickback, you know.
Yeah, I think that that's not going to work in this case, because
it probably wouldn't in every case. It depends on the situation, you know.
Yeah, it's the same lady that did this like last year. She's kind of a snooty thing, most likely thinking that, and you know, like, I don't have to.
I got this for you. I don't care what kind of complaint she's making or what she's doing. If she's made more than one complaint on you and stuff, you can make any claim you want. Take her to court and sue her.
Right.
And make her come to court and answer those questions and just say she's got a vendetta against you and she's telling lies, and put it in the court in a lawsuit,
yep.
And
I
let her
it.
Have to go get an attorney and defend herself. She's not expecting that.
Well,
you know,
not only for her, but I can do that for code enforcement too, because they're overstepping their boundaries. Because I'm not industrial or commercial. I'm private, so they're.
You know, I don't know. Don't ask me for too much advice. I'll get you in trouble.
You're okay.
If it was me, I'd get all my friends, and we would all do anonymous complaints on their houses.
Oh, ha 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 ha.
So,
all right. Well,
all right.
You set me up. You guys, God bless you guys.
Okay.
I appreciate you being here.
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk to you later. God bless.
Thanks.
Okay. We got Dan from the Carolinas once again. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, just a little clarifier, and maybe this lady will probably see why I brought up what I said earlier, if she was there probably hearing this. The fact of it is, for any of you folks out there that find yourself at odds about your home, by all means, get a hold of Mr. John and Gerard and for help there. And you have to, of course, send in verifiable information. At the same token, on that note there, that has been noted countless times, that we've heard night after night where Mr. John would sit down and show someone, and Mr. Gerard as well, how to defend your home from these marks, these people coming in and marching through and unlawfully taking you and your property and your home. You know, you have homestead rights for one thing, but Mr. Brent, Alan Winter sometimes will probably be the one that we'd like to hear in that regard from the legal standpoint. The point I was wanting, another reason why I got back on here, is that technically speaking, any company that a mortgage, or especially a bank, when you walk in that bank, we need to table this another night, but for that lady's benefit and others, when you walk in a bank, they take your collateral, whatever you're asking for, and that means your property or whatever that you're wanting to loan for, They take your actual collateral, yourself. They don't have the funds sitting in there in that bank, and they go through the government, and in a twinkle of an eye, they create that loan. And so technically that bank did not lend their funds to that litigant. And when you get in a real situation of a court of law, there's a gentleman out in, I believe in Arizona. I don't have any stock with him. I don't know him personally. I just know this man can be brought in. And when it comes to it, the bankers will have to absolutely bow out of it because they have deceived the client from the time that person entered through the door and came into a bank. And usually it's about 8 different fraudulent transactions that they commit, and they do those fraudulent loans probably way more now than what I used to know, one per every 2 minutes in this nation. Of course, that's regular business hours, you know, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. So I only brought that up. And then the other little point is about, and Mr. Gerard, I think you really answered that real well. So let's not try to go too lengthy on just a second here. When it comes down to martial law, a lot of people don't know this, but under the present situations, that is resting at the Attorney General of each and every state, and whether martial law is enacted or whatever, pretty much. And then only when we, and this is the sad part about it, and God forbid us to have this happen, only martial law can come into play when we are having a foreign country coming in and fighting in our actual counties. You mentioned 3,000. Well, I know you know the count is 3,000, maybe roughly 333, I think something like that. Counties or 133, whatever it is, counties, I believe that it's one or the other. And so the point is, you know, it would only be like you stated that there would actually have to be a foreign enemy coming here and we fighting on our soil against that enemy for foreign for a martial law to be enacted. So those are just a couple little points there, and I'll turn this back over to you, Mr. Gerard, and hope maybe that will help some of those people. Definitely, if they have any problems with someone trying to come and their house becomes inventory with some of these tycoons, I tell you, you better get on this National Liberty Alliance call and get a hold of Mr. John and Mr. Gerard and the specialists there that once you give them the proper facts, then let them give you some means and guidelines and some help. I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Most people don't realize how money is created and used in the United States in this fiat system. One of the things I found fascinating was the fact that, let's say you go to the bank to borrow $20,000. Okay, so they make a journal entry that they loan, let's say, Dan, $20,000. And it's just a journal entry is all it is. There was no $20,000 in the bank. They just make a journal entry that you now owe the bank $20,000. So you come in and you make your payments dutifully. Every month you pay the $100 or $200 you owe. And at the end of the thing, he erases the note, the $20,000, because you paid it off. He erases that. But you know what he doesn't erase? He doesn't erase the interest that you gave them on that note. Where does that go? How does that get accounted for? Because they're entering and erasing things, but they're not accounting for this money that was never printed, this interest that you owed on the debt to begin with, that they don't erase. And that's why the system is destined to blow up and fail, just based on that interest that they don't erase at the end of their fiat system is a downfall of it. You know what I mean?
So that's an awesome observation by you, and I think that a lot of people could learn by this. And we are late here tonight, and I think we deserve to have a chance when we get you guys back again, maybe give a little advance notice, Mr. John. Hopefully I've got a friend that Mr. Brent Allen, as I mentioned earlier, spoke to, and he can really walk you through in a short order how things happened with Congress and what took place at such and such points. For Congress is not setting by law, they're setting by resolution. There's a complete difference between a resolution that the congressmen make, and they're not printing, they're the only ones by our Constitution. They're breaking the law because they're the only one by our Constitution has the right to the coinage. That means the distribution of our actual legal tender. And so fiat monies is being created, but I will say this in close, no question about it. Our honorable president, I am convinced before this is over, this IRS situation, and a lot of people don't know the difference between earned monies, earned interest, and they bow down and they give their hard-earned funds that they normally make by their, sweat of their brow, but the definition is so complex and so far-reaching to find it, what is earned interest and that kind of thing, until these people just allow the IRS to bully them when, in fact, the IRS is collecting funds through those tactics that are unlawful versus where there is corporations and other companies that are putting their funds to work and we're getting interest back from a commerce standpoint. So let's not go any further, or on my part, I think that I'm trying to be courteous to you and others there. There'll be other nights that we really could have a nice conference with this and have some input from some of our very outstanding people that contribute to this in various ways. So I just don't want to take away from, there's one other person I believe might could be in the queue accordingly, and we need to be courteous to that individual.
Well, we'll definitely see if we can't do that, because it is an interesting subject. And, we'll fit it in between whatever else we got going on as far as our current, filings and stuff like that go. But it is a good subject, and it's certainly interesting. And it bears going over more than once. I've been through it a few times, but every time we go over it, I learn something else.
Did I learn something there that you really reminded me, as much as I know about it, and I hadn't given that a whole lot of thought. So I'm appreciative of your comment a few minutes ago.
Hey, there's a saying that says, a wise man can learn from a fool, but not the other way around. I'm not a wise man anyway, so.
Well, I don't think you're a fool either. I've heard you too many times, and boy, golly, day, I mean, you just stand. The more I hear you speak and at different times, and these people are pouring their heart out to you, and then on the other side, too, when we have Mr. Brent Allen Winters, my friend of mine, David, absolutely just really so much enjoys the balance that and the different ones, and to hear Brent bring us the nice dissertations that he's capable of. You better believe, you better carry that to the bank, what that gentleman is saying. Right. And not only that, our mentor too, besides you and others there, but Mr. John, I tell you, we love all you guys and what you stand for, and we need more people to come and patronize this organization and what is the movement of bringing this country back to us and in the right way it was intended to start with.
Right. Okay. Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much, Dan, for all that. My pleasure. We've got one other person. I don't have a name here, so I'm going to unmute you, and you can give us your name. And we'll end with you.
George?
Yes.
Jim in Pennsylvania.
Okay, Jim. Yeah.
What's I have tonight? One comment for NLA. Ron Paul's weekly column several weeks ago said that if you publicly talk about state militia or the militia, FBI has you under surveillance.
Well, I can attest to that because they've been at our houses multiple times for different things. But, you know, and they also talk about this list that is out there that they put people who are like, Tea Party or Patriot members on. And that was big, you know, back in the beginning of the Obama administration and maybe even before. But what's happened, what I can tell you is what happened is that got to be a ridiculous list. And I got to the point where I said, you know, if you're not on the list, you're no friend of mine. Because they got everybody on that dang list. After a while, it doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? So, we're doing everything that's lawful. You know, it's legal and it's lawful mainly. And so they can send the FBI anytime they want. And every time the FBI has come out, they usually send their rank and file people. They're very nice. And we've sat down with them and showed them what we were doing. And they should stop sending them out because I think we convert them. And we have new followers when they leave. Because we're very respectful and we have all our ducks in order. And we can show them, you know, what we're basing this on and back it up by sound, you know, evidence, and there's nothing we're doing that we got to worry about the FBI, and we welcome them anytime they want, and they can come out on the Monday night show, they can get educated, and they should. So, you know, that's part of this deal, you know, when they say drain the swamp. Well, guess what? The rank and file guys, I think, is most important that they understand the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all that stuff in order to do their job properly. You know, we got, and I think they understand it better than the top guys like Comey and all that. I don't think he has any idea of what's right and what's wrong as far as the Constitution goes. He certainly has no problem violating it. So maybe part of his problem is his ignorance of it. So I'm not afraid of the FBI, and I also don't hate the FBI. There's lots of good guys in the FBI, and I even had some that were, you know, in my family and friend, you know, peer friends. And so they can do whatever they want. All they're going to do is make us stronger because they're going to come away and say, "There, you look at these are good people." You know what I mean? And we are good people, and we're not terrorists, and we have no intention of doing anything that's outside of the law and decency. You know, but you know, listen, the one thing that we will do is we will stand up for our rights, and that's what we do. And if that's a crime, then I guess I'm a criminal at that point. Okay, so
very good, thank you.
Okay, well, we're after 12. We do have, okay, I got Teresa from Texas. I'm going to open you up and maybe make a statement or a quick thing, and I want to have the joy of having finished the queue. So go ahead, Teresa from Texas. Hello, Teresa from Texas. You've been unmuted. What is it? 8616?
You muted me.
Oh, I muted you instead of unmuting you? I didn't know you were unmuted.
Okay. Well, there I am.
Yeah.
Okay, just real quick. I'm really into the CPS situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made up some flyers and I want to alert average people, you know, just neighbors and stuff, of what's going on with CPS. Will National Liberty Alliance be able to shut down CPS? That's my first question. And then the second question is, should all these victims be sending you information to indict the caseworkers and the judges?
Well, look, if everybody sent us information to indict caseworkers and judges, we would be inundated, because I don't think that there's hardly any of them that are really following the law. There's a lot of bad information, bad people in that system, and the system's going to go down. There's no doubt about it. And so we don't have to worry about eliminating CPS, because it's going to eliminate itself when this thing goes down. And I don't know what we're going to replace it with or whatever. There are certain children out there that do need protection. Don't think that there aren't. There are some bad parents out there. There's lots of drugs. One of the reasons that they have so much power is because the state had to step in when the parents don't do the job. And so, of course, the state's never going to do as good of a job as we can do with the job that God gave us to do, and they're not going to do it better than us. And then there's always the temptation to make money, and then they start, and before you know it, they become the chief child trafficking agency in the United States. That's the problem. We need a lawful CPS and a benevolent CPS or whatever we decide to come up with to replace it. I'm not going to say that there's not a need to protect, to have a child protected. Absolutely. There's a lot of crazy stuff that goes out there.
But doesn't that fall under criminal acts?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Have a system in place for...
We do, and they have to use it accordingly. You know what I'm saying? They're never where they're needed. They're only where they're not needed. And they set up...
Right.
They set up a system that, they made it special, and then they ended up corrupting it. Yeah, you can have it through the criminal. They thought that because families are involved and there's children and minors and all this stuff, that we should have a special court that runs a little looser than the other courts. It wasn't a bad idea on its surface. You see what I'm saying? It sounded good, but look what it's turned into. So we got to do it better. Whatever that might be, we got to do it better. I mean, look at all these things. They do them in the name of benevolence, just like one of our forefathers said, they take away moral liberties under the term necessity, and the same thing with benevolence. Oh, we want to be kinder, we want to be this, we want to be that, and it never works out like that when the government's running it. It has to be run by we the people, and you have to have, this, what our one of the forefathers said, is government, our government is only for a moral and religious people. And so if you don't have that, you're not going to improve on anything, because if we're just looking for the minds of men, minds of men end up going into low gutter places eventually. So, we have to have God and the Bible as our yardstick. And if you're unwilling to do that, then you're stuck with what you're stuck with. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, so far, what I have on my flyer is they do not have to let CPS into their home without a warrant signed by the judge, and shouldn't it have two witnesses on it?
I don't know particularly if it needs two witnesses or not. I mean, I know that's like a common law thing, but that's not how they operate, in today's court.
No.
There's lots of parents groups out there. There's fathers groups, there's mothers groups, there's parents groups. Look, they got so many people that they have wronged, and they're starting to get together. And a lot of these people are their own people in the court system. You'd be surprised how many people join these parents group that had a problem with a spouse or whatever, and before you know it, they're sucked into the system that they used to work for. It's amazing that it's the snake eating its tail, basically, is what's going on. That should be good for us. Just be careful with your flyers, because if they find out it's you and they get mad at you or whatever, they will be vindictive. So I would try to be a little more covert, or to do something, have it not deflect back onto you. And there's lots of places. And you know what? Maybe you want to go through some of these national organizations and see what they have, because they have some good flyers themselves, and print their flyers out, because then now it's not your flyer. It's their flyer.
Well, do you know who already has a flyer?
You know what? I've seen them, and I can't tell you offhand, but that's something that maybe we can bring up in another meeting. I know that they're out there. I know that, we were dealing with one group was you know, for men, because, you know, men today, if you got children and you're a man, it's like, forget about it. You're less than a human. You know, they used to treat women like that. Now they turn it around onto men. But, you know, they abuse everybody. They don't care whether you're a man or a woman. It just seems like they, you know, it's open season on single fathers, you know what I'm saying? So, and there are national organizations out there, and they do have flyers, and you can copy them. And I would suggest that you get one of their flyers. I mean, maybe you can tweak it a little bit or whatever, but, you know, just try to deflect it off of yourself. It's always better to go into these things with a group than by yourself. Just like Brent was saying, you don't want to square off with the evil one, because, you know, you're going to have a battle there, and they have no honor. They're going to, like, believe me, you think they're not going to low blow? That's the first thing they'll do is low blow you, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, well, how far could a person go? Let's say they got a business card on their front door that CPS wants to come and check their kid, and that's the first they've heard of it. How far? I know they don't have to let them in the house without a warrant, but to absolutely keep CPS from taking their kids, how far can they go legally or lawfully?
Well, I mean, first of all, the only reason CPS can take your kid is if you're doing something unlawful. Is that not the case? If you're doing something harmful for the child, and they should have to prove that, and they should have to prove that in the court of law. Now,
they're all lying.
Exactly, and the thing is you never get your day in court. That's the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know how far you can go. I mean, how far would you go for your kid? People will die for their children. You know what I mean? I've seen people get up and run, go to a different state, and even go to a different country, trying to avoid these egregious, you know, state actions. You know, so how far would I go? I don't know. You know what I mean? Everybody has their own barometer on that. You know, but don't come in my house and try. You know, look, at coming in the house is like a big no-no, because If I shoot you crossing my threshold, you're going to want to make sure that you got the right paperwork and everything else, because I just let them know you're going to give your life for that. If you think I'm wrong, I think I'm right, and you got a gun and I got a gun, well, guess what? I got a shotgun with buckshot in it. So you want to step through that door? Let's go at it. You know what I mean? So if everybody did that, nobody would come to the house. I'm telling you right now.
Oh, yeah.
If everybody said, that's good, I got a shotgun here, and if you think you can take my kids away because I have a shotgun, well, I think we need to do trial by battle in this case. You know, they'll be coming to my door. You know, you want to deal with me legally and lawfully, that's one thing, you know, but don't come in here looking to take my kid away on bogus, you know, unsubstantiated hearsay information.
Well, eventually we're hoping to get back to regular courts and get rid of the family courts. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Whatever we do, it should be up to the people. And, you know, look, at regular courts, not that good of a deal either. You know, and you're bringing kids and things like that. Really, what they should do is what they used to do, what attorneys used to do years ago, is they would try to arbitrate. And like, if you went in to get a divorce, they would say, can't, you know, they would advise you against it. And they would tell you, you know, let's go through some counseling and see if we can't fix this. They don't do that today because it's all about the money. Well, the court should be the same thing. The court should say, look, why don't you guys go get counseling? What's the problem here? You know, there's lots of people that will volunteer their time to be a caseworker, a social worker, whatever you want to call them, that can sit down and interview, and most of these problems can be worked out with a civil conversation. I mean, look, if there's drugs involved and other extenuating circumstances, that's another story, but even that can be flushed out and can be dealt with in a humanitarian manner, you know what I mean, under the law. So, I mean, it's just that the CPS has gotten such a bad name, and they're actually, some of them are actually participating in child trafficking, God forbid, and You know, there's evidence of that, too, that they put these kids in the foster system and they lose them and they pass them around and all these other horrible stories. So I don't know. Can you fix a system like that? It's almost like you want to burn it and start over. I don't have all the answers to that, but we as a people should be able to figure that out. And I want to get going now because we're running way over. And
all right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And some of these things, bring them up next week. I mean, we have a couple subjects that other people would like to talk about. We'll take them under advisement and see if we can't spend more time, you know, coming up with a more viable answer. I don't have all the answers, obviously. I'm shooting from the hip here, giving you my thoughts on this, my opinions, which are not necessarily NLA's opinion, you know what I mean? But I'm giving you my opinion as a man and a father and all the side of a fireman and a mechanic and all things I've been in my life. I'm trying to give you some of my wisdom, a little bit that I might have, you know what I mean? And between all of us, we should make each other better and stronger is all I can say. So that's the advantage to being here. So thank you for everything and have a wonderful night and God bless everybody and we'll see you here next Monday. And don't forget about go up and on the site and look for the paperwork when John puts it up tomorrow or the next day and read the evidence because a week from this Thursday we're going to have that indictment on those particular peoples and those papers will all be up there too. You certainly should probably look at the paperwork that we're going to send and who we're going to indict. Okay.
Okay.
Have a
great
good night, everybody. Thank you.